Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Network on Saturday, May 12th, 2018. This is episode 1487. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by LastPass. Join over 13 million LastPass users and start managing and securing your passwords today. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on wordpress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at wordpress.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smart watches and all the doodads and G-jaws, or is it gee-gaws? Is it GIF or GIF? All of the hard and soft G's in your life, anything with a chip in it, all the technologies that are changing the world around us. If you want to talk with me, 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still call because we have, you know, you could Skype out. It's a toll-free number. 888-ASK-LEO. Website, techguylabs.com. That's free. No sign-up, no subscription needed. And everything we do on the show ends up there. So, you know. This advisory before the show begins, you don't have to write anything down. It'll all be put there for you. You don't have to yell at me at the radio. That's fruitless anyway. You can yell at me at the website. Still fruitless, but you can do it. You'll feel better about it. It's techguylabs.com. If you're there, you might as well be in the chat room during the live broadcast. It's fun because they're the kids in the back of the class, right? They're kind of throwing spitballs and making snide cracks. And they also very helpful. The live show, if you're not listening live, which you may not be, you wouldn't know, though, would you? The live show, we record this show Saturdays and Sundays, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. That's 2 to 5 Eastern. So if you're around at that time, go to irc.twit.tv, and you can be listening to the same thing that everybody else is listening to. If you go and it's not live, they'll be talking about something else. I know, it's very confusing. irc.twit.tv. This was a big week for developers because Google had its developers conference, Google I.O., and it overlapped with Microsoft's developers conference, Build, and they both had lots of announcements, although I have to say the Google announcements, I think, were probably a little bit more interesting than the Microsoft announcements. Maybe not the developers. Remember, a developer conference isn't really aimed at you and me. It's just that this is like one of the times in the year that these companies have a chance to kind of address the press and even, you know, people like us who have a real interest in it. So they do. And the keynote particularly, that's kind of aimed at like almost like State of the Union address. Except that for Microsoft, it kinda, I don't know if it was. The CEO of Microsoft, Satya Nadella, took some time to talk about ethics, which is good. There's been lately... for good reason, there's been kind of a movement amongst somebody, not so much computer folk, but people who use technology to tell the computer programmers and the designers, you guys ought to be thinking about the consequences of what you do as much as how you do what you do. You know, normally, if you're a computer programmer, you're wrestling with the machine. That's the biggest challenge, getting that machine to do what you want. And then you're wrestling with the, you know, imaginary user on the other end, trying to make it so that the user can figure out how to do what they want to do. And that takes up, you know, a lot of energy. But what people are starting to ask technologists to do is to think about the consequences of their actions. And this comes, of course, after Facebook. And, you know, it really goes back to even computer games. And I'm not talking about violence. I'm talking about addiction. See, it turns out, and that if you design a game, and you've played, have you played Candy Crush? You know what I'm talking about. You can design this game. You're getting a lot of feedback, right? This is one of the things that's changed. It used to be you'd buy a game, you'd take it home, you'd open the Ziploc bag, you'd take out the floppy, you'd install it, and you'd play it, and that'd be that. But nowadays, you're most of the time playing online, and even if you're not, pretty much every program phones the home office from time to time. Because developers realize, gosh, if we could get a real-time feedback loop between how the user is using our game and us, we could maybe tune the game to make it more appealing to the user, more engaging. And when you say the word engaging in computers and technology, what you really mean is addictive, right? We want more of your eyeball time. Facebook does this too. They have a feedback loop. They can see what you pay attention to, what you click on, how much time you spend reading an article. And then they can tune what they call the algorithm, the computer program that chooses what to show you. They can tune it to make it more engaging. And the problem is this feedback loop can really be destructive. It can be addictive. There are people who literally have died playing a game called World of Warcraft. It's an online game. It's very fun. Very, very fun. Sometimes so fun that you don't stop playing and you might never get up to go to the bathroom or get something to eat. And people have literally, I mean, not a lot, one or two, mostly in South Korea, died because they just never attended to the needs of nature and collapsed because it's so addictive. And how did it get addictive? Well, again, it's these computer programmers are getting feedback loops. They're seeing how much time players are spending in the game. In particular, how much time players are spending in quests in the game. And then what makes them spend more time? And it turns out it has to do with something called loot drops, the kinds of things you get when you succeed in a quest, and the kind of things that happen during the quest. And the programmer says, well, like, okay, let's give it a plus to that and a minus to that, and we'll turn this one all the way up to 11, but this one, we don't want to do that anymore. And it gets more and more addictive, more engaging. The companies want that because, you know, engagement essentially equals money. But for, as an end user, what ends up happening is you really get sucked into the game. And there are 10-step programs to get off World of Warcraft. And if you've ever played Candy Crush Saga or any of a million other games on your phone, then you just can't, you find yourself staying up late, getting up in the middle of the night, forgetting to feed your children. this is a part of it. So at the Build conference, Satya Nadella kind of started talking about this idea that maybe we need to kind of take a step back and think about the ethics of what we do. And, you know, because people, I think, get into computer science partly because it's really fun. It's addictive in itself. And it's really fun and it's satisfying. But also, I think people really spend the time and hours devoted to it, these long 80-hour, 90-hour work weeks, because they want to change the world. Isn't that what Steve Jobs said when he was trying to get the new CEO of Apple, Vincent Scully, to come over from Pepsi? He was a marketing guy at Pepsi. And he said, wait, you have a choice. You could continue to sell sugar water to people for the rest of your life, or you can change the world. And Scully said, wasn't Vincent Scully. That's a baseball announcer. John Scully. I said, didn't I say Vincent Scully? Yeah, no. Vincent Scully changed the world just by announcing the play-by-play for the Dodgers for many years. John Scully came over to Apple and became CEO, and then he fired Steve, but that's another story for another day. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And actually, Satya Nadella, the CEO of Microsoft, spent a good long time talking about this, so long that their keynote ended up being 3 hours and 45 minutes long. It was so long they had to have an exercise break in the middle. That's how long it was. But the really interesting keynote, I'm sorry I spent all this time talking about Microsoft's, was Google's. And what Google's doing with artificial intelligence, it's getting a little interesting. Maybe even getting a little scary. We'll talk later in the show about something. I'll play some samples for you of Google Duplex, which is an artificial intelligence that is, and if you're not paying close attention, a little bit too close to the real thing. There's a test in computer science called the Turing test. It's not widely loved by artificial intelligence researchers, but it is kind of, for better or worse, what we've got as a way of we were looking for something to pass the Turing test. What is the Turing test? Well, if you're in a room and you're talking through a screen to somebody or you're typing at somebody, can you tell which of the people you're talking to is a human and which is a machine, a computer? And if you can't tell that that artificial intelligence is indistinguishable from a human, it passes the Turing test. Nothing's done that so far, except maybe it did on Tuesday. And I'll let you be the judge of that in just a little bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's take a little tiny break. Come back. Your phone calls next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. When you call that number, here's the person you'll talk to, the wonderful, the lovely, the talented Kim Schaffer. Hello, Kim.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Oh, listen to her voice. Hi, Kim.
Words I never thought I'd utter. I have a bit of a Taylor Swift hangover this morning.
You went to see Tay Tay in her new foundation tour?
Yeah, when your friend offers you free tickets,
nice.
You get the bus to take you down there, you just say yes,
nice.
Whether you like the music or not.
And it wasn't just Tay-Tay. They had some other two artists, too. Who else?
It was Charlie XCX.
I saw it. Charlie XXICICIII.
And Camila Cabello.
And Camila Cabello, yeah.
And we got there during Camila Cabello. But
she's good. I like her.
So it was a lot of fun, but it was a late night. And the allergies. Oh, my God.
No, it's not allergies.
No. I did. I started having an allergy attack down there.
I'm a little hoarse, too, I just noticed.
No, there's some pollen down in Santa Clara.
Yeah. There's pollen up here, too.
Yeah. And I usually suffer from it up here, but that last night was bad.
Wow. So, but you enjoyed it? You'd recommend it?
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, it was fun watching the little...
the teeny boppers?
The teeny boppers, the little 11-year-old, 12-year-old girls who are a bit too scantily clad and wearing too much makeup and just being sassy.
Yeah, that's okay. You probably did that when you were five or 6 years ago when you were 12.
Yeah, 5 or 6 years ago. But it makes me very thankful to not have an 11 or 12-year-old
right
now.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, but they were cute.
Lisa and I are going to go see Pink.
Are you? That would
Saturday.
Be fun, too. She's another amazing performer.
I like Pink.
Yeah. She's great. She can really sing.
Yeah. And apparently a lot of aerial work in that show.
A lot of aerial work. Where's she? Same place?
Yeah. Oracle?
Oh, no,
I'm not going down south. I'm going to Oracle.
Okay.
Anyway, people probably don't care about our appointment schedule as much as they do about the calls you're receiving.
Yeah, and the first one you know so much about, so it's perfect for you.
What could that be?
Carl, he's starting a podcast.
Oh, thank God. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Kim Schaffer. I was a little nervous. Carl, hello. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, what's up, Leo? Thank you so much for taking my call.
My pleasure.
So, yes, as Kim was saying, I am starting a podcast, and I'm going to be running, I want to have 4 XLR mics. So originally I had bought a mixer, and I guess come to learn my other main goals, I want to have multiple audio channels when I edit, when I throw it in Pro Tools or Ableton, I want to have multiple channels. So do I need a mixer or an audio interface?
This is how it gets starts and it gets out. It kind of spins out of control. You can do a podcast, you know, with just your laptop and a microphone plugged in your laptop.
Well, I mean, I'm a total gadget guy. I'm all about sound, a photographer.
Yeah.
You know, I might as well. I've been doing a ton of research, and I just, it's not too expensive comparatively to photography. I feel like I'm getting started for under $1,000.
Oh, yeah. Heck yes. So what you do want is a mixer. What you'd like is something that will do individual channels. He mentioned he has XLR mics. That's the way most professional microphones connect. They look like Canon plugs, and they plug in. You can't plug them into your computer. So a lot of people do podcasting will get the USB microphones because you just plug those into the computer. But the problem with that is you can only do one microphone at a time. So if you want to do a podcast with more than one person, then you need multiple microphones. And if you're going to get multiple microphones, you're going to need a mixer. And as long as you're going to get a mixer, you might as well use professional microphones. They tend to be cheaper and better. You can get the Shure SM58, which is a $150 microphone that sounds great.
I was looking at the Audio Technica AT20. 40, I believe.
Yeah, that AT was designed, the 2020 was designed originally as a USB mic. And I would recommend, it's a condenser mic.
Okay.
And I don't like condenser mics for podcasts or for voice in general. Condenser mics are more accurate. They pick up every little detail, and that actually isn't what you want. You want to use a large coil diaphragm mic. That's what I use right now, what a lot of radio stations use for several reasons. One, it's not as accurate. It doesn't pick up every possible sound. That's a good thing. You don't want to hear a pin drop. You just want to hear the voice. So the problem with condenser mics is they, you know, you hear everything. In fact, you notice, I mean, when they make a record, when Tay-Tay's in the studio, she's using a very fancy, probably a Neumann condenser mic, but she's also in a soundproof booth. And, you know, and when
I'm going to be in a bedroom with maybe a
mattress. Yeah, yeah. So, you know, unless you want to build a soundproof booth, I wouldn't get a condenser mic. I would get, that's why I like the SM58. It's very forgiving. It's used in nightclubs by punk bands, which gives you some idea.
Nice.
But it's also a large coil diaphragm. And what's nice about that is a couple of nice things. One, it has what we call the proximity effect. As you get closer, you get bassier. For a male voice, that's great. Ooh. Actually, for a female voice, that's good, too. It's also good for what we call off-axis noise elimination. So when you're not talking right into the mic, you can barely be heard. That's a good thing. That's a really good thing, especially if you have four people sitting around a table in your bedroom. Now, let's talk about the mixer. I have a recommendation I love.
Okay, hit me with it.
It's from Behringer, Behringer, yep. And it's called the X-Air. And what it does exactly what you want. Now, you're going to have to get we have the little X-Air that we use, which has 8 microphone inputs. But it doesn't do the one thing you said you wanted, which is have each microphone recorded separately.
Multi-channel editing.
Yeah.
And that's why I was looking at the Scarlett 18i8.
Scarlett's are excellent.
Why?
Nothing wrong with that. Okay. But the X-Air 18, you might price check that. And this has one other thing that I really, really like. It has, you know, they used to call it, I don't know, they had to stop because it was a brand name. It has, let's put it this way, it has auto mixing. It used to be called Dugan, right? Yeah, but Mr. Dugan didn't like that. He said, you can't call it Dugan if it's not me. So it's auto ducking. What happens is it automatically, very quickly, and I think reliably mixes by turning up the voice that's talking and turning down the voices that aren't, eliminating noise. In a way, that's probably why you want the separate channels. That's going to help. So I would look at the X-Air 18 from Behringer. It's a really nice device, and it's not expensive. And you can control it with an iPad or a computer. It has software. You can remote control it. Lots of nice features. It's a real, real good mixer with very good mic preamps. That's another thing we're looking for. So if you do get a better mic down the road, this would be a good choice. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Say again?
$600 for the 18.
But you're, you know, and that's why I would say, you know, the AT2040 is fine, but I don't think you need
that. I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
What price range do you expect that the SM?
The SM58 is about $150 bucks. It's cheap.
Okay.
If you want to spend a little more, you could use the mics I use, which I love, which are the Heil PR40s. Those are about twice as much, $350.
Okay, yeah. No, start small. Start. With one more quick question.
Sure.
Also, I want to have like a sound effect, like, you know, the little, you know, the sounds in the sky, like boom, shakalaka, and crazy little effects.
This is a really cool device called the Stream Deck from Elgato Systems.
Okay.
And this plugs into via USB port to your computer. It has 15 buttons on it. And it can do a lot of different things. It's for streaming video, guys, but one of the things it can do is playback audio sound effects. So you could have 15 sound effects associated with one to each of these buttons. And just play, press it, and it plays back. Boom shakalaka. So if you want to do it live, huh?
And that'll be its own channel, like, as well on the output?
Sure. Depends how you mix it. You could have a laptop going into the Behringer. The Behringer will take laptop inputs and have that be just your sound effects machine, sure.
Awesome. I really, really appreciate your help. Thank you.
Yeah.
What's your email once we get going?
If you're going to do Boom Shakalaka, it's probably a sports podcast, right?
No. I mean, honestly, it's called Narwhoff.
What is it? Narwhoff?
Narwhoff, yeah. N, like the letter N, N-A room with the fool. And it's just going to be, I'll send it to you. It's hard to describe. I mean, I'm a huge fan of KFI AM 640, all the shows.
With a
you know, and I've been thinking about doing a podcast for a couple of years, and it's loosely based around marketing ideas, and it's going to be me and a lifelong friend in the booth.
Please send me a note when you do it. I'd love to know more about it.
I'd love to. Thank you so much.
It's fun, isn't that? I mean, you're basically doing a radio show.
Uh-huh.
Without having to get anybody at KFI to say okay to it. You can have a, you know, it's a niche audience, or you can have a general audience. I mean, it's gets you get to do your own thing.
I'm doing it for pure passion. I'm doing it for pure passion.
Yeah.
If one person listens or a thousand.
Right on.
You know? So.
Right on.
Yeah. And so, then you guys, like I said, you guys are a big inspiration. It's like, it seems like when all you guys are doing your shows, it just seems like homies in the booth, you know? You
guys are all that's a good thing to keep in mind, because that's really what a podcast is genuine, real, right?
Awesome.
That's the hardest thing to do. When you first start in radio, and it took me about 15 years, you say, well, I'm in radio. I'm going to have to talk like a radio announcer now. And you get kind of phony and not real. And it took me a long time. I was just talking the other day to somebody, and I said what turned me around was not get to the point where I didn't give a damn. I was doing a TV show, and like a longtime broadcaster told me, you're too smiley smile. Because I was always like, hi, how are you? Good to see you. And I
really cold.
Yeah, and so I decided, screw it. I'm going to act like, you listen to me. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to reach out to you. I don't have to go get you. You listen to me. And that actually worked. That's when my career took off. So
that's awesome, right?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, Adam Carolla is a good, Chumley's in the chat room saying, like Adam Carolla, yeah, he's a good.
He's everywhere.
He's a good example. He's done very well. He's like, I don't care if you listen. You don't have to listen to me. Screw you.
Yeah.
And it works for him because you know what you hate? You don't want somebody ingratiating who's saying, please listen to me. I'm a nice guy. I don't want to listen. You don't want that. You want somebody to say, I don't care if you listen.
Yeah, I mean, our first show topic, usually when I say marketing, is black lights. You know, what happened to black lights?
Whatever happened to those?
You know, black lights are awesome. They were everywhere. Or trapper
keepers. Trapper keepers.
These are game changers.
That's nice. Have fun.
And Narwhal, so it's Narwhal, any room with a fool, but it's also like
I love the title. Room, you know? Any room with a fool. Hey, have a great day.
Yeah, thank you,
good
Leo.
Luck.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye. Bump de bump. Hump de hump. That magic music means it's time for Mr. Scott Wilkinson.
Woohoo!
Woot woot. I have this thing. That you play the sound effects, Scott. I was just telling our last.
Oh, call, I saw that. That's
Stream
awesome,
Deck from Elgato. Yeah, it's not expensive, but I haven't put any sound effects on it.
Oh man,
I might have to put some sound. You know, actually, I hate those shows where there's like. Sound.
Yeah, I know, but it's kind of fun.
Early on, the first time I started doing computer talk radio in the early '90s, I started doing it with a guy named John C. Dvorak, and John had a short attention span. So I gave him one of these things and like 1,000 sound effects, and it kept him entertained. It was a little annoying. Scott is our home theater guru. He doesn't need any sound effects. He's got great content. Wow, what a concept. He's the editor at avsforum.com. I've missed you, Scott.
I missed you too, Leo. I hope you had a good time.
Oh, Japan is amazing.
Yeah, isn't it though? I've been there a couple times.
Yeah. Oh, I'm in love with it. I want to go back.
Did you go to Kyoto?
Did was beautiful. Yeah, you know beautiful. What I didn't do is go to Akihabara.
Oh man!
Well, I'll tell you why. I was told it's not really what it used to be. Akihabara, which is the electronics district of Tokyo, used to have buildings with like 1,000 little booths,
tiny little hovels,
and some guy in there soldering eyeballs and selling weird stuff. And apparently, they closed it all down.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too
told,
bad.
Nah, it's not what it used to be. There's still big stores, camera stores and stuff. But
Big department. There's a huge department store. I forget what it's called.
Oh, there's a ton of them, yeah.
But Kyoto is just so beautiful. Oh, I just fell in love with that city.
Everything about Japan is fascinating. Mm-hmm. But, and many of our TVs come from there.
Quite a few. Yeah, that's right.
Although Korea and now China seem to be eating their lunch.
That's true. TCL in particular, this Chinese brand, is really eating their lunch. I mean, they're doing some pretty amazing things in terms of the quality and the feature set. and the price. Yeah. That's the really amazing part.
I worry, though, because, you know, there are a couple of Chinese phone makers who are no longer sold in the United States. In fact, one of them is about to go bankrupt because of it. Because,
really?
Well, because the Department of Commerce says don't use, you know, Chinese phones. The big phone companies who had contracts pulled out. And a number of these companies like Huawei, ZTE, and Xiaomi, which are huge in China, just have no presence in the U.S. because people don't want to buy them. And I'm worried that the same thing might happen, and not to mention tariff issues, to Chinese TVs in the United States.
Well, that's a very good question. We don't know what's going to happen there. I hope that doesn't happen. I mean, you know, competition's a good thing.
You can get a 50 – Scooter X in the chat room saying you can get a 55-inch TCL TV –
yep.
At Best Buy today for $500. It's 4K UHD.
Yep.
HDR.
With Dolby Vision.
Dolby Vision. HDR. Roku built in. Yep. That's remarkable.
And the backlight system is called FALD, F-A-L-D, Full Array Local Dimming, which is the preferred type of backlight system for an LCD TV. Instead of having LEDs around the edge of the screen, they're all arrayed behind the screen, and each different zones can be dimmed or brightened. So if you have a dark part of the image over here, it gets darker. And if you have a bright part of the image over here, it gets brighter. So the overall contrast is increased. Screen uniformity is better. I mean, in all ways, it's really a better thing to do. And just today, this is amazing news, actually. Today only, as far as I know, at Best Buy, you can get the 2017 model. I'll admit, it's last year's model. But 55 inch with all that capability for $500?
Wow. Wow.
Jeez
so,
Louise.
And you say the image quality is good. That the
yeah.
Because, I mean, we could talk about all the bells and whistles, but the picture's got to be as good as it is.
Absolutely. Wow. My colleague Mark Henninger reviewed it last year, gave it a top choice award. We have two levels of award for reviews, recommended and top choice, which is the highest one.
Wow.
And he gave it a top choice for performance and value. I mean, it was, I believe its original list price was $650.
Isn't it
which
funny?
Which is still really great.
These giant flat panels are finally coming back down to the price TVs used to be.
I know. I just answered a reader question about, they had one of these old projection TVs. You remember like the Nova Beam?
Oh gosh, I used to have one too. A Diamond Vision from Mitsubishi. Yeah,
this one was from Sears. And it had these big CRT guns, one for red, one for green, one for blue, shooting onto a super curved silvery screen.
Yeah, they had to curve the screen because of chromatic aberration or because of distortion.
Optical distortion.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Exactly. That thing in 1985 sold for nearly $2,000.
Wow.
And I looked it up on usedprices.com. It's an online blue book. And they said that the typical used price these days is like $80.
I think if you walk around, you could probably find one on the curb for free.
Exactly.
Jeez. Well, who would pay $80 for that?
Well, you know what? Some of the people in the comments of that article that I wrote said, well, you know what? Retro gamers might want.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. You put it in your
big and it's bulky.
Ready Player Zero basement room, your man cave.
Yeah, I guess. Anyway. So look how far we've come from 1985 till now, when $2,000 bought you this 480i standard definition 50-inch screen. It's a 50-inch screen. Now you can get a 55-inch Ultra HD, which has, dig this, 24 times the number of pixels on the screen.
Wow.
As that old Sears projection TV for about the same price. Well, for much less, actually, for $500.
Whatever happened? I'm thinking of another Chinese manufacturer, Leico. We talked about.
Leico. Yeah, Leico. They went under.
They went under. They're gone.
Yeah, they're gone. They had some serious subsidies from the Chinese government.
Yeah.
And I don't remember the exact details. And they were quite disruptive as well. They were selling an 85-incher for, I don't know, $5,000, something like that. was remarkable, actually. And it had Dolby Vision. It had all this cool feature stuff, but the company didn't survive. I think there was some shenanigans going on.
Well, the guy who founded it is also the guy who does Faraday Future, that electric car company that gets a lot of attention. He just raised another couple of $1 billion. So I wonder what's...
I'd be a little suspicious because of what happened with Lee.
Should you worry, though? I mean, if you buy a TCL is it going to get good support? I know people complain sometimes about the support.
Well, that's true. And I don't actually know the TCL story. I do know the TCL is, I think, the third largest TV company in the world and the largest in China.
Wow.
So it's a big company. It's a giant company, in fact.
You know, you pay $500 for a 55-inch TV with all the bells and whistles.
Yeah.
You probably shouldn't worry about support that much.
I wouldn't worry about it that much, to tell you the truth, particularly in this case.
Is it good enough to be your main TV in your living room? I mean, is it that good?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. Boy. I mean, it's not as good as an OLED. I'll say that.
You better say that. Because I spent four times more on my OLED TV.
I know. And I'm just in the middle of reviewing the 2018 LG OLED, the C8. And it looks phenomenal. I mean, OLED in general is just a superior picture, but you're going to pay a lot more for it.
You sure are. Yeah.
If you've got a budget, this is an excellent way to go.
And Roku's built in, which I think is really nice for a lot
of. Yes,
at that price, I mean, this is a dorm room TV. This is a TV.
Almost. Yeah.
Wow. Pretty
cool. Absolutely. So it's a great deal. I think it's only today. So
go to Best Buy, or I guess
BestBuy.com, maybe?
Yeah. Scott Wilkinson, I'll tell you where you go for him, avsforum.com. He's editor over there, does great reviews and articles and polls and all sorts of stuff, and joins us every week. Thank you, Scott.
My pleasure.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Mike says that TCL is also a major OEM for other brands.
That's true. Yeah. That is true. Good point.
Yeah. Interesting.
Good point.
I bought my mom. I feel good now. I bought my mom a TCL TV because it had
Roku built in. I'm sorry. I missed the first part.
I bought my mom a TCL because it has the Roku built in. So I'm glad she really likes it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right.
It's great to, you know, there's the question of, do I get smart TV, you know, do I use the smart TV functions in the TV, or do I get like a Roku box or Apple TV or something like that? And the question is a good one. You can update the Roku box a lot easier. It's $100 or whatever. And in the TV, not so much. But Roku, I think you can download apps into the TV. So, you know, that makes it a little easier to deal with because it's all in one thing.
Right,
it's all in one device.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah.
I give you the con for next 200 seconds.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Let me turn off my...
And can you stay to the top, too?
I can. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
Happy to. Thank you. Maverick 56, I don't care about smart TV, just want the best picture. That is certainly a viable attitude to take. Absolutely. And if you want the best picture and you can afford it, as I said before, OLED is the way to go. OLED. And really, LG is the only company that makes them. They also supply panels to Sony, which also offers consumer OLED TVs. I happen to have a Sony in my theater. But it's, you know, I mean, niggling little arguments aside, one way or the other, they're both super excellent TVs. So it's the technology that really matters there, I think. So, yes, Best Buy one day sale, Scooter X. Last year, my 55-inch Roku TV, Toad Sloth. Last year, my 55-inch Roku 4K under $400 makes me feel rich. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Quite remarkable what they are doing these days. Let's see. Oh, Mike Heiss is in the chat room. Hey, Mike, how you doing? I used to make those CRT projectors. Still have a Harman Video one in my attic. Yeah, sitting there collecting dust for sure. Leico is gone. Sadly gone. They had a good idea. It was very disruptive. I was rooting for them, to tell you the truth. but just didn't work out. So, hey, everybody. Good to see you. Missed you last week. So everything's copacetic here. By the way, I thought I might mention on the show, but I'll mention it here for those of you who are watching the feed, that 2001, A Space Odyssey, is being re-released on 70mm film, a print that was made from not quite the original camera negative film, but close. And it's supposed to be a lot closer to Stanley Kubrick's vision than the Blu-ray, which came out in 2007. And that Blu-ray is quite a bit bluer. It's not because it's a Blu-ray, but because it's actually the image looks a lot bluer. It's a lot cooler, to use the term from color temperature. And so this one is going to be quite a bit warmer, apparently. It's playing in four different theaters around the country. So if you're in L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, or New York, and you have a chance to go see it, it's being shown in 70mm film. I'm going next Friday.
I'd love to see that.
Wow. I'll report about it next week.
All right. See you in a minute.
You bet.
Thanks, Scott. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion, a thought. James in Downey, California. Hello, James.
Yes, hello.
Thanks for hanging on.
Okay, I'm trying to get rid of cable. Had very many bad experiences.
Aren't we all?
Okay,
the worst.
The
worst.
Only one here.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, what would be the cheapest way to go about it? I mean, they have AT&T internet, but...
The problem is how you get your internet. And, only about... This is depressing, but only about half of the country has more than one choice. They really screwed up the internet in this country, essentially giving a duopoly to the local phone company and the local cable company. At least with the phone company, there are other companies that can use the phone lines. The problem with that is the kind of technology that the phone company uses is called DSL, is not as fast as cable internet. And suffers as it gets farther and farther from the central office of the phone company. And after a certain point, doesn't work at all. So for most people, like probably everybody in the U.S., your best choice is, it just kills me, the cable company. So getting rid of the cable company is awfully hard. If you're willing to get your internet from the cable company and then nothing else... You can probably, get the TV part over the internet, or as they call it, over the top. But you still need high speed internet. If you really want, do you really like? I don't want to have anything to do with the cable company at all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so many years with cable.
I don't blame you, but so your other choice is going to be either DSL or in some areas fiber. I don't know. Is fiber available to you?
Pretty much, I'm calling for my kid, and he only watches like Discovery, National Geographic, and Adam or whatever.
Well, I can get to the content part too, but first you got to get the internet. Is your kid in Downey or is he somewhere else?
No, he's somewhere else, but he's got the AT&T internet, and then they got the Spectrum.
Yes, Spectrum's the Time Warner cable.
Yeah, so, we had nothing but bad experience.
I don't blame you. The problem with, first of all, I got to point out, AT&T is every bit as god-awful as Comcast and Time Warner and everybody else, right? So, it's not a great choice between the phone company, Ma Bell, and the cable company. They're equally awful. So, there are areas, we're in one of them, where you have an independent internet service provider. Some of them people are putting in fiber, Google for a while was putting in fiber, then they gave up. And I think what's happening, my guess is that all these companies on the horizon see high-speed wireless internet coming. We have pretty good speeds now with what they call LTE on your cell phone Oh, cell phone companies. Aren't they? They're so much better than cable companies and phone companies. Forget it. But I think a lot, for instance, Google gave up trying to put in fiber, A, because they were getting a lot of pushback from local governments at the behest of the phone company and the cable company. You know, these incumbents, these entrenched incumbents, they don't want anybody, any competition. So they do everything they can to stifle competition, including going to state legislatures and making laws that the local municipalities can't do internet either. They don't like it when the city does. I mean, that would be a good choice. The city does. Oh, what a thought. No. Many states have laws against that now.
Yeah, they were installing the, Optimal Fiber Service?
Optimum, yeah. That was from Cablevision, and they stopped?
No, they did install.
Oh.
Not here. I mean, not at the house, because it already has Spectrum, but they were installing it on a telephone poles.
Yeah, if you can get fiber, that actually is the best solution of all. But it's just really spotty in its rollout. Ultimately, I think everybody assumes that the next generation of cellular, 5G of cellular data or mobile data, is going to be so fast that all of these expensive wired solutions will be obsolete. I believe that's what's happening. Now, it may be that they've bought into, you know, the hype. I don't know. We won't know for a few years. Meanwhile, you have what you have. You have your choice. You have AT&T, in his case, or Spectrum. Neither of which is very good. AT&T is slow unless you've got fiber, and AT&T does offer fiber in some areas.
Is that a company right there, fiber?
No, it's a technology. So the companies are AT&T, Comcast, Time Warner, Spectrum. The technologies are cable, internet, DSL, and this newer using fiber optic cables, which is very fast but very expensive. They have to dig it out. Costs thousands of dollars per subscriber, and it turned out it just wasn't worth it for most of these companies, so they've all turned their back on it.
Is there any way to just go with DVDs, like the movies, buy the movies?
Yeah. You know what? That's tempting, isn't it? You can get a Netflix subscription and rent the movies. If all the problem is, you said he wants to see these channels, like the Discovery Channel, and the only way to do that is to have high-speed internet. You don't have to have a cable subscription. You just need high-speed internet. And if you're just watching TV and there's nobody else sharing your internet, then probably 5 to 10 megabits download stream would be enough. You can't share it, though. If somebody else starts watching Netflix while you're watching Discovery, you're out of luck. And then look for a package. And there are a number of companies now that provide packages. YouTube TV is one. There's Sling TV. AT&T has its own called Direct TV Now. These are what we call over-the-top services that allow you to use your internet connection to watch these channels. But not all of them have Discovery, so you'll have to figure out which one has the channels your son wants.
Well, just those three, Discovery, National Geographic, and Animal Planet, whatever that is.
Just those three, but... Oh, man, it's just such a tangled net. The cable channels, I know because I used to work for one, the cable channels are kind of at the mercy of the cable companies, and the cable companies don't like it when they go over the top because it puts them out of business. So only the biggest cable channels like ESPN, HBO, Showtime can do this. The other problem is many cable channels are owned by cable companies. So they're not going to do it. It's just, you know what? It's a mess. We got in a situation where big companies, content companies and transport companies, own the government. And the government's made laws that make it very difficult for us as end users to get satisfactory service at a reasonable price. In every other country in the world, practically, they got it, but we don't. The right answer is never going to happen in this country, which is to have the municipalities take over the infrastructure, just as they do in most cases with water and power, and then let private companies sell internet access on top of the bandwidth. But that's never going to happen. It's a pipe dream. We're kind of stuck with the mess we've got, and the only hope is maybe at some point wireless will cut through this. It's just a mess. And then net neutrality's gone, so... I apologize. I know I sound bitter, cynical. I sound like I've given up. I have. The good news is that the younger generation doesn't really care because they're all watching YouTube. That's the future of television. Even Jeffrey Katzenberg, formerly head of Disney, the guy who left Disney to start SKG, he just started a new TV operation that's all 15-minute YouTube-style videos. Because that's what kids don't have the patience to watch an hour. I don't know. Maybe you got me on a bad day. The best thing you can do is get the best internet you can get in your place and then just get everything over the top. Try as best you can. And what did I do? I still have cable internet and cable TV because it's just a mess and there's no good solution for this. Is it better in Australia? No. Okay. I'm just asking. Australia has the same kind of a similar situation to ours, unfortunately. But then you go look at Scandinavia, Korea, South Korea, where it's, you know, cheap, high-speed internet. See, I solve it. Just watch us all the time. I'm going to take a break. What do you think? Maybe you have a solution. 8888, ask Leo. Can you fix this? Can you fix this? Do you know a way? Honestly, I really believe the right solution is to let the local governments, the city governments, the county governments own the infrastructure just as they do water and power and then lease it back to internet service providers. Have 100 different internet service providers. Then you have real competition. I think it's the only way to solve it. It's how they solve it in Scandinavia. It's how they solve it in many Asian countries. Doesn't have a chance, though, here, does it? Comcast will never let it happen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls coming up. Synapse says, Australia has good internet if you can keep the power on. You get the power to stay on. All right. It's time once again for your friend and mine, Mr. Scott Wilkinson. Oh, let me turn your mic on. That would help. There you go.
And I have 507 seconds. Well, hey, everybody. Glad to be back with you. iPhone 27891 says, how are Hisense TVs? And also, does OLED have... Whoa! Who's that?
Someone
on the phone.
I tried to call my mom and she hung up on me.
Doggone it.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, and does OLED have burn-in issues? I was just talking about that with someone else here in the chat room. OLED I wouldn't call them burn-in issues. See, there are two phrases that are often interchanged or used interchangeably, and they shouldn't be. One is called image retention, and the other is called burn-in. Generally speaking, image retention is temporary. It's there. You can get rid of it. Burn-in is permanent. And I really don't think that OLED has a serious burn-in problem. Unless you keep a static image on the screen for days and weeks and months at a time. Then maybe you'll have a permanent burn-in issue. Generally speaking, though, you might end up with an image retention problem. But most OLED TVs have some sort of... Now I'm not so sure about that. Plasmas certainly did have a screen scrub feature, if you will, which basically floods all the pixels with white or random colors or a bar that moved up and down. There were a number of different techniques to do this, which kind of tended to eliminate image retention. Now I'm thinking about it. I'm not 100% sure that OLEDs typically have that. Maybe somebody in the chat room will know. I'll go look at my Sony OLED. I haven't even thought about it because it's not really a big problem. As long as you don't keep a static image, and that includes, you might think that a news ticker along the bottom isn't static because it's moving, but the area that is defined for that moving news ticker is static. And after a while, you might see an outline. But that's after a long while of having that channel on the screen for days at a time. And other than that, I really don't think it's a big deal. Now, as for Hisense TVs, I must admit I don't have as much experience with them as I do with TCL. And so I'm not 100% sure. I think they mostly don't do FALD, this thing I was talking about before, full array local dimming, where the LEDs are behind the screen rather than along the edges. And I think they, I think, as I recall at CES, Hisense, their top of the line was FALD. But that was only 75-inch TV, which I believe sold for, I think they were selling it or telling us that, its price was going to be $5,000. Which for a 75-inch TV, FALD is not bad at all. But I don't recall if it's Roku. I think it's not, but I'm not 100% sure about that. It's called the H10. In any event, I think TCL is making a bigger push into the U.S. market is another factor. Hisense is here, certainly, and I know they want to be in the U.S. market, but TCL has made a concerted effort. They went so far as to buy the naming rights to the famous Chinese theater in Hollywood. It's now called the TCL Chinese Theater. And they are making a big push into Best Buy and other retailers. You know what? I haven't been in a Best Buy lately. I'll have to see if they carry Hisense there as much as well. UJ, do any of the OLED panels have orbiters to prevent image retention? That's what I was talking about, pixel orbiters. And yes, they do. In fact, I just now remembered in my review of the LG C8 that I'm working on right now, it does have a pixel orbiter. And what that does is that shifts the image by one pixel here and there. but it also causes a pixel or two of the image to be cropped. And so I actually need to go in and turn that off because I don't want, during the review, certainly I don't want to have any of the image be cropped, which also means that it's getting scaled, which means that you're losing some resolution. So what I do typically is to go into the menu system and turn off the pixel orbiter so that there's no cropping. Every single pixel that's in the image coming into the TV is being displayed on the TV. And that's what I recommend doing. And again, as long as you use some common sense and you don't leave it on for days and days on the news channel where there's that ticker or the financial channel, then you're going to be fine. It's not going to be a problem. Oh, Beatmaster has a good question. I wonder if HDR, high dynamic range, will cause more burn-ins because of the higher output. Wow, that's an excellent question. I don't know. That makes some sense because the pixels are being driven so much harder to produce so much more light. Perhaps that could be an issue. I'm going to have to look into that. Thank you, Beatmaster. That's a very interesting thing to think about. Swamp Rat says, my 10-year-old Sony has image retention. If a still image is on for a long time, you'll see a ghost of the image for a few minutes until you change the source. I assume 10-year-old Sony means it's an LCD TV. And that LCD TVs also can get image retention, but it's much less, even than OLED. So I'm kind of surprised, to tell you the truth. Very good. Yeah, Mike Heiss, go to the Best Buy at the Empire Center. They think they do have Hisense. You think they do. And Hisense maybe was getting brand rights to Toshiba for TV. You know, that brings up a great point that I'm not 100% sure I agree with. Buying a brand name of a defunct TV brand. Now, Toshiba is not a defunct company, but they used to make TVs and they don't anymore. And so have a company like Hisense buying the Toshiba brand or the rights to use the Toshiba brand on their TVs, I'm not sure how much of a good idea that is because Toshiba TVs have been out of the market for many, many years now. Swamp Rat says it's a LCD 46-inch fluorescent backlight. Okay, well, so it's an older technology. I suppose that might be part of the reason. I can't imagine the type of backlight would make that much difference. But you see, it's image retention. It's not burn-in. It goes away. after a while. So there you go. Tim Elliott, yeah, like Westinghouse. Westinghouse TVs are still available, believe it or not. As far as I know, at least last year, they were at CES showing TVs. I don't know where they're sold. And ones I've seen haven't been very good. But, you know, more power to them if they can get some good ones. So I think here comes our music.
Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. The Tech Guy, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. 8888, ask Leo the phone number if you want to talk along with me. 888-827-5536. There are certain thematic elements on this show, and one of them was our last call, typical. I want to cut the cable. How do I do it? But there's also a thematic element, which is that the companies that make money on you not cutting the cable are dead set against you doing it. The other element that we talk about an awful lot is artificial intelligence and voice, right? They kind of go together, things like the Amazon Echo and the Google Assistant. Google showed off at its developers conference something it calls Google Duplex that was, at the same time, terrifying and exciting. It was both very exciting and then very scary. Google Duplex is, it's a couple of things. First of all, Sundar Pichai showed how the voices of Google Assistant are getting better and better. Sundar Pichai is the CEO of Google. I mean, just starting to sound pretty human. Then he showed how they're bringing real people into the Google studios, like singer John Legend, and then using his voice to lay on top of the automated voice. They've always used real human voices, but there's a certain mechanical sound, you know, when you ask Amazon Echo or Google Assistant, if you ask them a question, or Siri, it sounds a little bit like a human, because they did use real human voice samples, but then it also, the way they put it together sounds machine-like. So Google's done a lot of research on how can we overlay human speech patterns. They call it prosody. How can we overlay human speech patterns on top of the machine-generated speech to make it sound more human? And they're getting very good. They did a demonstration with John Legend. I mean, how would you like, you know, John Legend or Scarlett Johansson or Sean Connery as your Google voice? You could soon. You'll be able to have it. Oh, that was exciting. But then the next thing they showed was terrifying. It was Google Duplex. Now, this is still in the project stage. Let me see if I can find some voice samples. I want to play this for you. Because when you hear them, and Google, by the way, did get a little bit of heat on all of this, because the voice sounds so good, it's maybe indistinguishable for human. It sounds... And then what they did with it is they had it go out and do real-world stuff. And that's when it got a little bit scary, because they had Google Duplex calling to make appointments, for instance, for your hair salon. Let me play a little bit of this. I think I can play this, and you can hear it. Now, what happens here is... You're going to hear the Google Assistant calling a hair salon. The receptionist at the hair salon doesn't know she's talking to a robot. So the person making the appointment is not a human, is a robot. Listen to this.
Hello, how can I help you?
Hi, I'm calling to book a woman's haircut for a client.
That hi, I'm calling to book a woman's haircut from a client, that's Google Assistant. That's not a real human. And listen, they're going to stick in things that Google calls disfluencies, ums and uhs, to make it sound more like a human, but also to cover up processing, because there is still some processing going on. This is not a canned conversation. This is a conversation happening based on what the human is saying, and the computer has to handle sometimes challenging issues and handles it quite well.
I'm looking for something on May 3rd.
Sure. Give me 1 second.
Now, that poor receptionist does not know she's talking to a robot. And by the way, Google took a little heat for that. They said, in future, the robot will announce, what is it going to say? Hi, this is Google Assistant. I'm calling for, maybe? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That uh-huh is a disfluency.
Sure. What time are you looking for around?
At 12 p.m.
We do not have a 12 p.m. available. The closest we have to that is a 1:15.
Do you have anything between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m.?
Depending on what service she would like, what service is she looking for?
Just a woman's haircut for now.
Okay, we have a 10 o'clock.
10 a.m. is fine.
Okay, what's her first name?
The first name is Lisa.
Okay, perfect. So I will see Lisa at 10 o'clock on May 3rd.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Great. Have a great day. Bye.
That's a real call, but it's not a human and a human. It's a human and a robot. What do you think? You want to hear a much more challenging one? Here's Duplex calling to make a restaurant reservation.
See, how may I help you?
Hi, I'd like to reserve a table for Wednesday the 7th.
For 7 people?
It's
now, notice, by the way, the human didn't understand. For 7 people? No.
4 people.
4 people? When?
Next Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Oh, actually, we live here for, like, upper, like, 5 people. For 4 people, you can come.
So, you may not understand what the human is saying. She has a pretty strong accent. She's saying, we don't take reservations for less than 5 people. For 4 people, you just can come. Now, normally, artificial intelligence, a computer, is going to be baffled by that sentence, right? Didn't phase Duplex.
How long is the wait usually to be seated?
For when, tomorrow or weekday or?
For next Wednesday, the 7th.
Oh, no, it's not too busy. You can come for 4 people, okay?
Oh, I gotcha. Thanks.
Yep. Bye-bye.
I don't know how the computer understood what was going on. Very difficult to understand the accent, even for a human. But much more fascinating to me, and anybody who's kind of understands how computer artificial intelligence work, it handled what a real curveball. We don't take reservations for parties under 5, and it handled it. Some commentators, myself included, thought this. I think it passed the Turing test. It passed that test I talked about where you can't tell the difference between a human and a computer. Now, there's little things it does that sound a little robotic. The voice isn't perfect. You know, we're trained. Human brain is trained to recognize normal human speech. We recognize nuances, very fine nuances, and they're just slight odd things in there that might make you think, well, that doesn't sound quite right. I don't think you jump to the conclusion that it's a computer. You might say, well, that doesn't sound quite right. They're making huge strides. Google said, we have thousands of calls like this. We are going to roll this out as a product sometime this year. The idea being you could say to your Google Assistant, and I'm sure Amazon will follow quickly, although it feels like Google's kind of starting to win this race. But you'd be able to say to your Google Assistant, hey, call the salon and make an appointment for me for Wednesday at 3. And it would do it. Now, at some point, it won't be calling a human anymore, right? It'll be calling another assistant at the salon. At which case, I imagine there'll be some sort of, I don't know, secret handshake, a look, and they'll start going. But for now, the human-computer interface is very challenging. It's something computers have always had a hard time with. And Google, you know, demo. You got to be careful because demos are, you know, can be fooled. Yeah, but Google seems to have done it. That's. You may remember this day as a day that you first heard a computer sound like a human, very convincingly. Seems to me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take more of your calls in just a bit. 8888. Ask Leo. Want to hear some more of them?
Good evening.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi. I'd like to reserve a table for Friday the 3rd.
Okay, hold on one moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Hold on one second.
This is hard for a computer.
So
right?
Friday, November 3rd. How many people?
For two people.
Two people?
Yeah.
What time?
I love the way it said for two people. Right. Computer doesn't need to do that. I say for two people. But they went for, extended that or just to pretend it was thinking.
At 5 p.m.
Okay. And your name?
The first name is Daniel. That's D-A-N-I-E-L.
Come on, have a seat.
Okay. You're all set.
Okay, great. Thanks.
We'll see you next Friday. Okay, thank you. Bye.
Goodbye.
Wow. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We are talking high tech at 8888. Ask Leo, what do you think of that Google Duplex? Is that, I mean, you would you be fooled by it? I think you would. You might think the person calling is weird, a little odd, a little off, a little, we call it uncanny valley. But I think you'd buy it. What they didn't do is play the calls where it went all the heck. Like, click. But the ones where it worked pretty well. I think for a while I've been saying that AI is a marketing term for the most part. Goodness gracious, it's like Bitcoin, blockchain. You know, they just add it to something. Oh, it's got AI. Like it's, and that sells it. It's a marketing term. And a lot of the time it is. It's just a computer program. You can't really say that the Amazon Echo is artificial intelligence. It's not. It tries to understand what you said and then responds. Siri, same thing. Most of the time responds poorly. It's a computer program. If this, then that. But what we just heard is, I think it's starting to verge to the next level where It's not artificial intelligence in the sense that it's thinking. It's not a thinking machine. You're not talking. But I don't think anybody assumes that AI would be thinking. If that's what you if you think of HAL 9000, it's like thinking like we do. That's not a requirement for AI. Really, the only requirement is that it acts like a human and is indistinguishable from a human. We don't need to know what's going on inside, and it probably isn't thinking as we understand it. Nevertheless. It's kind of like talking to a human. Wow. What do you think? Of course, the first thing everybody says is, oh, gosh, I hope robocallers don't ever get this. Well, they already kind of do, don't they? They have something similar. As far as I know, Google is not going to release this technology to the public. This is their secret sauce. But they may let you use it. Line 3, Kenny, Springfield, Missouri. Hello, Kenny.
Hello. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for hanging on.
Okay. My question that I had was my Sonos is not playing the Twit Live feed.
In a group? Or
no,
individually?
It's one with Alexa.
So what you can do and try this is say Echo or choose your trigger word. I don't like to say the A word because I don't want to trigger a lot of people's echoes. But you say Echo. Listen to, now TwitLive is our live feed, and sometimes you have to say listen to TuneIn TwitLive or listen to TwitLive on TuneIn and see if that works. Now what we do know for a fact, and we haven't been able to figure out why this is it'll work on an individual Echo, but it won't work on a group. So you can't say listen to TwitLive on TuneIn everywhere or in the bedroom. It doesn't work on the group. But if you're just trying to do it on a regular one, let me see if I can turn it on here and see if that works. Hey, Echo. Is my Echo listening? Echo, listen to Twit Live.
Twit Live from Leo's TuneIn.
Yeah,
see if that works.
Now I'm going to have Inception because it's working. But it's not working for you?
It works on the Echoes, but it won't work on the... Sonos One or what?
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So, yeah, I have one of those Sonos Ones, too. I haven't tried it on there, I don't think. It may be that, remember, not everything you can do with Echo works on a Sonos One. For instance, I can't get my Audible books to play. But
well, it used to work.
It used to work. Well, try it on there. The other issue, of course, is well, I don't know. Try it on there. You might have to say. I know I do with other Echo devices. I have to say, if I'm having it play on a Sonos, tell it what to listen to, like on my bedroom Sonos.
When I go to the app, it says when I hit play on the app on the Sonos app, it says unknown song.
Okay.
Encoded incorrectly.
Okay. Would you just do me a favor? Because I don't want to. This is basically a tech support call for my podcast network. So I don't really want to waste other people's time with this. Send me an email, leo@twit.tv, and I'll connect you with our engineer, Patrick, who just had a baby. Congratulations. But he'll get back to you. And I would love for him to work with you to troubleshoot this so we can see if it's something we're doing on our end or something Amazon's doing or whatever. Amazon does changes from time to time. See, I told you it wasn't artificial intelligence. I told you that. It's barely usable, frankly, sometimes. But I would like you to be able to listen. It's our podcast network, and I'd love you to be able to listen. Dave in Livingston, Montana. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dave. Hello, Dave. Oh, it's not Dave. I'm sorry. It's Dave in Livingston, Montana. Yes, it is. Hi, Dave. All right, I'm going to put Dave on hold. And I'm going to go to line 4. Peter in Brooklyn. Hi, Peter. Peter! Hello, Peter. Is it me? Is it me? It might be me. Peter, can you hear me? Peter fell asleep, too. I'll try Ryan. Hey, Ryan, are you there in Sacramento?
I am.
Ah, yay. Hi, Ryan.
Hello. So my dilemma is that I have multiple Echo Dots throughout the house, and the Echo Dot speakers are subpar, to put it nicely. So I have them connected via Bluetooth to their own independent sound system.
Yes.
I'd like to use the multi-room music function. When I do, it turns off Bluetooth and plays through the terrible Dot speakers.
Thank you, Echo. Anybody in the I have no idea why it's doing that or if that's even normal, but maybe in the chat room, somebody who – we have a lot of people use Echo in the chat room. So you use your Echo Dot. You ask it to play something. It's paired to a Bluetooth speaker, and it plays normally when?
It will play fine, but when I engage multi-room music and say play everywhere,
then it
won't. Turns off all the Bluetooth connections, and it only plays from the individual speakers, the dots themselves.
Yeah. I think I've heard this before. I think this may be a kind of, you can't, yeah, I think it's because Bluetooth latency is such a problem that you would have an echo chamber. I think that that's possible. Tell you what, let's punt on this, and if anybody has an answer, I will pass it along or we'll put it on the show, the website at techguylabs.com. I think it's my guess is because it's Bluetooth latency and it just turns it off. It does it on purpose. Johnny Jets in studio coming up next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Use aux cables instead. All right. Yeah, I think I'm going to guess that does that on purpose because if it did work, you would be sorry. That's probably why. Because there's so much delay in the Bluetooth and those speakers all would have different. Or is it a Bluetooth issue? Maybe it's just a limitation of Bluetooth. Our show today brought to you by our fine sponsor, LastPass. My God, if you're not using LastPass, hurry. Get to LastPass.com/twit and set it up. We've talked about LastPass for years. In fact, what was it, about 4 or 5 years ago, Steve Gibson did a deep dive into how LastPass works. He talked to the creator of LastPass, Joe Segrist. Joe showed him all the code. And Steve became a customer because he said this is the right way to do it. What does LastPass do? It's a password vault. It's literally the last password you'll ever have to remember. Twitter, just a couple of weeks ago, 300 million Twitter accounts. They all had to change their passwords because Twitter accidentally put the passwords in the clear, unencrypted, and they were worried that people might know it. And it's a bigger problem for people who don't use LastPass, because if you use the same password on multiple sites, who doesn't, right? That means you not only have to change your Twitter password, you have to remember where else you used it and change it there. That's why you got to use a password vault. Why? Here, let me explain how a password vault works. LastPass is the best of these. In fact, I like it so much. I've not only used it for years, but we use it at the business. We have LastPass Enterprise. In fact, as part of our benefits to employees, because I believe in this so much, every employee gets a free LastPass account because I want them to protect themselves and incidentally protect the company by making sure their passwords are safe. The idea is you need to have long, strong, truly random, truly, unfortunately, unmemorable passwords wherever you use a password. It shouldn't be a combination of your birthday, your dog's name, and your children's birth sign. It has to be unique, different for every site, different for every application, and it has to be long and truly random. Problem is nobody can remember that, right? That's where LastPass comes in. You have one password you remember. That's the password to your LastPass vault. Everything else in the vault, LastPass remembers for you. It generates long, strong, totally random passwords, keeps track of them, autofills on iOS and on Android, so you don't even have to type them in. And certainly if you use the Chrome, Firefox, Safari, or Edge browsers, the Internet Explorer, they have plugins for all of them. It automatically fills in websites. You don't have to remember your passwords. I use LastPass is so secure. I also use it to keep track of all my credit cards, my passport, my driver's license. I use their secure notes to store stuff like social security numbers I wouldn't want anybody to have. It's in there, so I don't have to remember it. It's in my LastPass vault, and my LastPass vault is everywhere I need. Now, let me talk about Enterprise, because if your employees have your passwords, we had an employee who literally, I can't believe this, put all the passwords to the websites, to the data, everything, on the he couldn't remember it, so he put it on a website, a publicly viewable website. Well, it was convenient for him, maybe not so much for us. That was when we started using LastPass for everyone. 81% of breaches are caused by weak passwords. LastPass protects every password in your business, doesn't slow down your employees. Our employees love it. We actually require they turn on second-factor authentication. That's protecting my business, right? That means that those passwords, that you know, this is the keys to the business, is how our websites, you know, where you log into our websites or our data storage. LastPass makes password sharing really easy. As a family, I share with Lisa all the passwords she needs access to. Same thing in the business. We have folders with different permissions, so our IT guys have different access from the people in the front office. Everything's encrypted, AES 256-bit, no man-in-the-middle attacks possible. It's awesome. They have enterprise products, but also LastPass Premium for personal use, LastPass Families. That's what I use, LastPass Families for your entire family. That way I share my passwords with my family. When, you know, Lisa says, well, what is the login for the cable company? I could say, oh, let me share that with you. And she has access to it. In fact, what's nice is she can change it, and it's changed in my password too. You give her permission. She doesn't have to have permission to do that. There's one more thing I really like, which is called emergency access. If you die or become disabled, you can designate people who will have access to your LastPass vault. And there's a very strong protocol around it to keep people from just taking it, right? It's really smart. For teams of 50 or less, there's a LastPass Teams. At work, at home, fix your password woes with LastPass, the number one most preferred password manager. Learn more at lastpass.com/twit. We've been using it for so long. I've been trying to get them as an advertiser ever since I started using it, pretty much when they started. I'm really pleased that we could do their ads and help spread the word about LastPass. lastpass.com/twit. Johnny Jett, it's great to see you in studio with us.
Nice to be here.
Doesn't make that much. For people listening at home, Skype sounds so good, they don't even know you're not always in studio.
That's hopefully.
You're rarely in studio.
Very rarely. I think this is my first time in the new studio.
Yeah. What brings you up here?
My wife and I were speaking at Pinterest a couple days ago.
Wait a minute. Speaking at Pinterest?
Yes.
Your wife, Natalie, people may not know, is a Pinterest superstar.
She's a pinfluencer.
Pinfluencer. I like Pinterest superstar a little better, but okay, if that's what they call it. What makes you a pinfluencer?
Well, you know, she actually works with a lot of brands on how to drive traffic using Pinterest.
I see that all the time, like on Instagram, sponsored post or do people make money on that?
For sure. She makes some money doing that. That's but nice. So follow her, by the way. Plug Natalie Discala, D-I-S-C-A-L-A.
Natalie Discala on Pinterest and Instagram, right?
Yeah, and Instagram, and I'm Johnny Jett.
Do you ever sell anything on Instagram? Do you ever say sponsored posts?
Of course, once in a great while, but yeah.
And they pay you based on how many followers you have?
Engagement and how many followers, but you know, my engagement on Instagram is not too good.
Right.
My wife has a beautiful Instagram. Actually, she's doing a takeover right now.
Your cleavage isn't attractive enough, Johnny. You got to work on that.
Yeah. I was like, well, how do these girls have millions of followers?
There are a number, like hundreds, of young women, scantily clad young women. Yeah. And I think they make like six-figure incomes.
Oh, no. Some of them make $15,000 a post.
Oh, my goodness. Holy cow.
Yeah, I'm in the wrong business. Exactly.
Johnny joins us every week. That was Travel Better with Technology. Usually you have a website and an app.
I do. Actually, I have two apps today.
But before we do that, I just want to say how helpful all of your tips were on our last vacation. I used many of them.
I'm glad to hear. And I was excited to see all your pictures in Japan.
Oh,
I forgot to ask you about how was your layover in Seoul.
Seoul is that airport, the Incheon airport. We were in the terminal, new terminal they built for the Olympics, I think, and it was just spectacular.
And did you see the ice rink?
I didn't. I looked for it, okay. But I didn't see it.
And how did you like Korean Air? Did you fly Korean Air or did you fly Asiana?
Korean Air. Okay. And it was very nice. We were on a 787 Dream. What is that, a Dreamliner?
Yep, the 787
coming back.
A380 going out? Upstairs bar? No.
I missed the bar. Okay. I don't think so. I think it was a 747. You would have known if you were on this. I think it was a 747-900, I think, going out.
747-800.
800.
Yeah. No, 900.
No, I was on the better one than I.
Yeah. That's a Leo Laporte one. Yeah.
So, yeah, both are great. Korean Air is very nice. Not crazy about the food on Korean Air.
No.
Well, it's Korean food.
Yeah, I like the, what's it called?
Bibimbap.
Yes. I get that every time.
I do, too. It was good.
Yeah.
But
it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's well done for bibimbap, for an airplane, for bibimbap in an airplane.
Not too bad.
Booby Scooby Dooby Doo.
You're making me hungry, actually.
So what is your app of the
So day? Last week I was in New York City. Yes. I ran into one of my buddies, and he was like, you got to use the app Next Stop. So I looked at Next Stop. It's $2.99. Don't get it.
Oh.
Because I did some research. So I was like, Next Stop doesn't have great ratings. And so then I did some research, and I found out that the New York Subway MTA map is free, much better, 4.5 stars out of 20,000 reviews.
I know why this is, by the way.
Yeah, why is that?
Because the city sells this information to Next Stop, but they keep it for themselves for free. And this is the problem for a lot of these companies, is all of a sudden these municipalities, and by the way, taxpayer dollar paid for all that stuff. Okay. So it shouldn't, I don't know why they're charging for it, but anyway.
Well, the Next Stop, the New York Subway MTA map is free. The Next Stop is a private company, and that's $2.99.
That's what I'm saying. It's $2.99 because the city charges them.
Gotcha.
The city doesn't charge itself.
I gotcha. Anyway.
I use City Mapper. Have you ever used that?
Yeah, but I have used that.
You know what I did, though,
for going point A to point B?
Yeah, in Tokyo, it turned out Google Maps did all the same things better.
Yeah.
Google Maps now, because it has transit on it, is really good.
Google's taken over. Everything's Google.
So if you're in New York, you would use the MTA app?
Yeah, but what I like about it is because it has a countdown clock. So
you know when the next train's coming.
Exactly. Last week I was there, it was 91 degrees. It was an all-time high for May 5th or whatever day it was.
Wow.
And, you know, it's 90 degrees. It's 90 degrees outside, 100 degrees in the station.
Wow.
And the next train wasn't for 11 minutes. So my buddy's like, download this app. You can see the countdown clock.
You go upstairs.
And then right before it comes, you just go down.
Is that what real New Yorkers do?
That's what they do.
Wow.
Although my buddy, who's a real New Yorker, uses the Next Stop one. But I'm telling you to try them both.
If you were only in New York, does Next Stop do other cities?
So actually, this one's made by MapAway, and they do all the major cities.
Oh, so you pay $2.99 per city.
Well, actually, this one's free. Again, the MTA map is free, and MapAway makes those.
Okay.
The one for the city.
Cool.
So I probably shouldn't even mention Next Stop, but because it's confusing everyone.
So the name of this one, the one to get that's free?
New York Subway MTA map, and it's free on iOS and Android.
Nice.
So check that out, and it's for all five boroughs.
It's actually really, I love cities with good mass transit because you can be a tourist there, get around. The Tokyo subway system is so good. Actually, the trains in Tokyo, in Japan in general, you don't need a car. You
agreed.
Get anywhere.
Agreed. You don't need a car in New York City. You know how much it costs to park a car in New York City?
How much?
Overnight? $70 at most hotels.
Wow.
$70.
That's a lot.
So I never Very, very
don't rent a car. Just take a bus in or train in.
You could take an Uber or Lyft from the airport, or take the train. It's a little bit confusing from the airports.
It is, because they have to. You have to change trains.
Except from Newark. Newark's easy, but from JFK, right. you got to jump on the subway, and then you got to jump on. You can either take a train or the other subway E-train. But anyway, in LaGuardia, you got to take a bus. The M60 bus, which is, but it's only like $2.
Johnny's like the Rain Man of travel.
I am Rain Man. You say, I play volleyball, Johnny, with my friends.
How do I get from the airport into Manhattan? Well, you could take the.
Go ahead.
What's your website?
All right. So it's actually not a website. It's another app. Yeah. It's called Spotted by Locals.
Spotted. I've done tours by locals. What's Spotted by?
So
locals?
This is a guidebook.
Ah.
So they're in 71 cities. And it costs $3.99 for the app, for each city. But what you do, and I used to say $3.99, that's, you know, why would I want to spend $3.99? But you think about it, I used to buy guidebooks for, you know, $9.99, $14.99.
Yeah, but this is better because you got locals.
Exactly. So they hire locals to do these reviews on you know, different places, whether favorite places, restaurants, attractions, whatever. So that way you're not going to all the tourist traps. And the New York Times just gave it a glowing review. And that's why I actually wrote about it and featured it. So one of the things they do is, you know, they try and keep you away from the different tourist traps. But, you know, they'll tell you where to go. And you just punch in and it's all actually, you don't even have to be online. There's an offline section as well. So you don't need to be online the whole time. And they have 425 spotters all around the world. And these guys know them. They meet them twice a year. So it's just not like some random people.
There was an app that was trying to get people to do it for free, and it went away.
Right.
But if you pay people to do that,
yeah, it's tough to get good information for free.
Yes. Spotted by locals.
Yes.
I have to say we used Tours by Locals a couple of times. And we're going to use them a couple more now.
Yeah, they're great.
It's such a great result. We were in Osaka, and we had a nice guy, Hideki, he met us at the hotel. He showed us how to use the subway. We didn't drive. We walked and subwayed everywhere. And it was a great experience.
And how much was that?
It was $250.
And that's a private tour.
Private
tour. But you could have done a group tour for like $10 a person or something.
That's right. And then, of course, you've mentioned before the free one, but it was too late for me to use the free one.
You got
to
do that a couple weeks in advance.
Very nice. Johnny Jett. You'll find him at JohnnyJett.com. He's also on the Instagram at Johnny Jett. Follow him so that he gets more money.
Sign up to the newsletter.
Paid post. Oh, that's the big one, right? Sign up for the newsletter. It's free, right? JohnnyJett.com. He's also on Twitter at Johnny Jett. He joins us every week, sometimes even in studio.
That's right.
Where are you going next? You going home?
It's a secret.
You never tell. But if you follow him, especially on Instagram, he'll post a picture saying, "Where am I now?" And it's a fun game. Where in the world is Johnny Jett? Thanks, Johnny.
Thank
you.
Great
to see you.
You too.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. This is hysterical. So this is an article. Oh, it's from 2011. No wonder. Best apps for traveling like a local. And they have an original iPhone in the image, but I guess it's because it's an old article.
Is it spotted by...
Spotted by locals.
I forgot to mention they started in 2008.
Yeah, they've been around. There was one that just went under because they didn't get the crowdsourcing that I'd hoped
for. I saw Clout just went under this week or last week.
Clout did, thank God.
Yeah.
You know why it went under?
Because it wasn't very good.
GDPR. They're going out of business May 25th, which is the deadline for getting your site compatible with GDPR. And I think they just said, you know what? We're not making any money. Screw it.
Really?
I think you're going to see a lot of sites go away May 25th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully not mine.
No, you know, we're trying to figure out what the heck we have to do for GDPR. Everybody has to do something. It's very weird. It's a real burden, frankly. I'm all for privacy, but if your company has more than 25 employees, you have to have a full-time privacy ombudsman.
Unfortunately, I don't have 25 employees.
I know, me neither. Thank God.
There's
all these issues that, and apparently there's some debate over whether, you know, most websites log IP addresses. I'm sure yours does. There's a debate over whether that is collecting personal information. If it is, then you have all these things you have to do. It's nuts. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Let's go back to the phones. I think I've got it down now. I believe this will be Dave in Livingston, Montana. Hi, Dave.
Hello. How are you?
I'm sorry. Whatever I did.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. I pushed the wrong button or something. I don't know. Anyway, thanks for calling.
I've been cut off a couple of times. Anyway, I have heard you talk about net neutrality.
Yes, yes.
And you are a fan of net neutrality.
Yes. I'm a fan of a free and open internet. Yes.
Okay. And I just heard you talk about GDPR.
GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation, about to go in effect in Europe.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. All right. And net neutrality gives government control over
Wrong. You're wrong, listening to the wrong propaganda. So let me tell you.
Let me come from where I come from. I do not want the government to have anything to do with the internet because that's our last bastion of the First Amendment.
And you would like the internet to be run by the giant internet service providers, Comcast, AT&T, Verizon, Sprint. That's who you want to run the internet, right?
No.
Oh, you don't? Okay.
No.
So net neutrality
Wait a minute. You just talked about, the fact that Google is one of the scariest things around.
Google isn't going to run the internet either. The net neutrality says that all bits that travel on the internet are equal. Who would be against that? Who would be against that? The companies who charge you for access to the internet because they would like to charge Google and YouTube an extra fee to get to you, Netflix an extra fee to get to you. That's called net discrimination. The problem with net neutrality is a terrible name, and I think it confuses a lot of people. What we really want is the net as it has always been to be free and open. Did you know that it's always been free and open from day one?
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
And do you understand that
there's a threat to that? Because companies, if they are not regulated, we're not talking about regulating the internet. We're talking about regulating companies. If they are not regulated, will then use your access to the internet to make money off of the companies who are providing content on the internet. That's the issue. Net neutrality is not regulating, not government regulating the internet. It's government regulating companies. Now, you may say government should not regulate companies. Do you feel that way?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And I also think that most of the stuff that people are concerned about with net neutrality is not under the purview of the FCC. It's under the purview of the FTC.
Yeah, you've bought into all of this junk propaganda coming from essentially Comcast, AT&T.
Let me tell you,
the source of the information you're listening to, Fox News and its relatives, is directly provided by Comcast and AT&T because they don't like the idea that they would be prevented from setting up toll roads on the internet. Now, if you're against all government regulation of companies, you're against antitrust regulation? You're against privacy regulation?
Yeah, actually,
you don't feel that a company like Equifax should be compelled to protect your data?
No,
okay.
I don't.
Okay. Well, then you have a strong philosophical disagreement with me, but that's a legitimate point of view. I'm not saying you can't have a point of view that no government shouldn't be involved in that, but I have a feeling that if government did not in fact protect our water, if government did not in fact protect us against rapacious companies that would like to steal our information and sell it to the highest bidder, we'd be in trouble. Now, actually, that's kind of the world we're moving into because we are in fact in a very much of a hands-off free market at this point. But
No, we're not. Bull. We are not in a hands-off free market. We need to get back to a hands-off free market. Okay. We need to. I should probably tell you I'm a libertarian somewhat.
No, that's a libertarian point of view. That's a total libertarian point of view. I understand that. Yeah.
And I understand the fear of big government of big companies.
I understand the fear of big government also. I do too. I understand what you're afraid of. And you're absolutely right. We want to preserve free speech. And if a government said to the internet, well, you can't allow these people or those people on the internet, that would be wrong. That's why we have a First Amendment. It'd actually be a violation of the Constitution.
Yeah. What's going on now with all of the political rhetoric about Facebook and Google? Both Facebook and Google scare the hell out of me. So does Comcast. So does they all do. But I also understand, or I believe, that free market will ultimately work. Now, we are so far in this country, we are so far away from a free market that it's pathetic. But I'd like to see us move back toward that.
Well, you know, one of the issues that is right up your alley is this issue of internet service providers, the duopoly that the FCC enforced. That means we don't have real competition in internet service. And because we don't have free market competition, the two companies that control your internet, the phone company and the cable company, can do anything they want.
Yeah, but 5G, but 5G is going to change that.
Yeah, no, of course not.
Maybe not. Maybe. Okay, well, okay. But innovation and the free market, if there is a need, if there's an abuse, I do believe that the free market will somehow correct it.
Yeah, and Americans have this great faith in the magical free market.
But I have a great distaste for the government.
Yeah,
and you know it's like they talk about healthcare. Well, okay, everybody brings up the post office. Well, bring up the post office with cancer. The post office.
Well, first of all, the post office is in fact a private corporation, but that's another matter entirely. Let me make the one point. We don't agree over one point, and it's a strong libertarian point of view that there should be no governmental regulation of business. That I can understand you have that point of view. In my opinion, a light touch regulation of business is not only appropriate, but is actually one of the roles government has to play. As far as I'm concerned, government represents our interests as a society. And corporate interests are, as constructed, the corporate interests. Corporations don't have an interest in society. They have an interest in maximizing profit. So I think there is an appropriate natural tension between corporations that want to maximize profit in a free market and a government that wants to make sure that societal needs are protected to some degree, whether it's just clean water to some degree.
The second part of that, I do not believe that the government really cares about us. They care about getting reelected.
Well, then you should fix the government. You're right, but we should fix the government. The problem is that because these net neutrality regulations are gone, and incidentally, the net was free and open. And the FCC, in fact, was preserving it. You know, AT&T, for instance, very famously a few years ago, started shutting down the use of Skype on its network. The FCC said you can't do that because it's competitive, right? Skype is a phone service. You can't do that. Fine them. They only fined him $17 million. But it was enough to get AT&T to stop doing that. That's called preserving net neutrality, preserving competition, right? That's the government's role, is to preserve competition. You want a free market. Well, one of the big flaws in a free market is monopoly, right? That's one of the roles government, I think, appropriately has. Now, we may disagree. We do disagree. But this is vital if you want an internet that runs free and open. And I'll tell you, I'm going to have to take a break, but it's key to my business. I'm an internet content provider. We do podcasts on the internet. And as long as our bits are the same as NBC bits and Comcast's bits, I'm happy. But the day Comcast says, you know, we're going to give you NBC for free, but we're going to charge you for access for TWiT, that's the day I'm out of business. That's why net neutrality is a bread and butter issue for me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Oh, let me, before we go much farther, talk about our fine sponsor. I love the sponsors on this show are both products I use all the time, LastPass and now WordPress.com. I've been a WordPress user since, I want to say 2003 is when Matt Mullenweg first created the greatest blogging software ever, WordPress. And I immediately downloaded and installed it. I ran a WordPress server for the longest time. But I noticed that I was spending a lot more time maintaining the server and a lot more money maintaining the server than blogging. That's when I discovered WordPress.com. Ah, same great software, but they do the hosting. They keep the software up to date. They're all, you know, you never have to worry about security. They keep it patched. Same with the plugins. And by the way, they offer all the same great plugins and themes. So you don't feel like you're deprived. In fact, it's exactly the opposite. Suddenly you can focus on blogging or whatever it is you use a website for. It's really no surprise. 30% of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. It's just a great platform. The other thing I like about WordPress.com is it's a community. So you can have a follow button on your site. Sometimes they'll feature you on the front page. Drives a lot of traffic. There are, I don't know how many, but millions of websites on WordPress.com. And they're so good. Plus, you get support. That might be the number one reason to use it. 24 hours a day, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. They're also there on weekends, just not 24 hours. And the support people are so nice, so friendly, and so helpful. So if you ever run into a problem, you know that there's somebody you can call. That's awesome. Thing is, WordPress, you don't need to be a computer expert by any means. Just go to wordpress.com/techguy. You'll get 15% off your brand new website, whether it's a personal site. And by the way, every one of you ought to have a personal site. I'm serious, because if you don't put stuff up on the web, then you're at the mercy of anybody who does, right? If, you know, if you have a business, you don't have a website, your competitors can rip you, right? They can make your life miserable. Create a website. It's easy to do at wordpress.com/techguy. Great for e-commerce too. Yeah, they have great e-commerce, including a nice simple buy button. It's very effective, or you can go all the way up to a complete online store. Plans start as low as $4 a month. Abby, my daughter, just set up her WordPress site. Because she, for the exact reason I mentioned, I think every high schooler, in fact, you should, if you're a parent, set this up for your high schooler or get them to set it up. Because that way, you know, they put their best work there, their portfolio, their, you know, pictures, their performance, you know, when they won the soccer game, they put that up there. Now when somebody Googles their name, that's what they find. That's what you want. I feel like everybody ought to do this. Every kid ought to have a site. And I've been telling Abby this for years. Finally, she did. WordPress. She said, where should I start my site? I said, go to wordpress.com/techguy and get 15% off right now. wordpress.com/techguy. I think you'll be very happy. And if you haven't set up a site, or you know somebody for a wedding, a baby shower, a newborn, you know what a great thing to do? If you got to like somebody to do this. But it's a great gift. Register the baby's name and then set up a WordPress site in their name, right? And then just hand the parents the keys. That is a great baby gift. WordPress.com/techguy. And we thank them for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. We were talking last hour about Google and their amazing Duplex, which is an automated kind of, it's basically the Google Voice Assistant making calls on your behalf, restaurant reservations, beauty salon appointments. They've been using it. I didn't know this. I don't think anybody did, because it's so kind of lifelike that I think people might not even realize they'd been called by this robot. They've been using it to update the business hours part of Google Maps. You know, if you go to a business on Google Maps, it'll say what hours the business is open. And they wanted to make those more accurate, more reliable. So apparently they've been placing thousands of calls with this voice assistant. Hi. What are your hours of business? Uh-huh. Okay, thank you. And it's, you wouldn't even know that you were just called by a computer. Well, there's another area of artificial intelligence that's all equally weird and maybe even a little more scary. That's robotics. Have you been watching Westworld, where the robots, you know, rebel? There's a company, used to be a Google company. I think Google wisely decided to get out of the business, called Boston Dynamics. They make, well, frankly, scary robots. And I think Google realized this is probably, we don't need to be in this business too. We're scaring people enough. It was purchased from Google by a company called SoftBank. You'll be hearing a lot more of that name. It's a company run by Masayoshi Son out of Japan. And his Vision Fund, which is, I think, $50 or $60 billion, is buying up a lot of technology companies. They own Sprint. He bought Boston Dynamics. They have a robot. They have a number of robots. They have robots that walk around. If you look for Boston Dynamics on YouTube, they have videos of their robots being abused by humans and taking it. This seems a bad idea, by the way. You know, let's not abuse the robots yet. They also have a dog-like robot that they developed for the U.S. military. Four legs, it turns out, can navigate uneven terrain better than a wheeled vehicle. And now they announced this week, Boston Dynamics is going to sell a consumer version of this scary dog robot. Now, I wish you could see this. You're going to be able to hear it, I guess. I'm going to play this video from YouTube. It's called Spot Mini. Ain't so mini. It's about the size of a Labrador. And it's definitely robotic looking, but it's got four legs and it can walk around. They say this is the quietest robot they've ever made. Just the sound is scary. If you go look at the video, you'll be even more terrified. The video is of the robot autonomously navigating their offices and labs. Now, that means autonomously means without a driver. And what they did is they actually used a remote control to drive the robot around the office so it could make a map, an internal map, kind of like the LiDAR maps that self-driving vehicles make. And now, having the map, it's able to negotiate through the office, walk around, avoid running into chairs, even people, because it does have some sensors. It's fair. Now, if it's just your dog, I guess it's okay. Remember, this was developed for military uses. Maybe search and rescue, I don't know. I saw Westworld. I'm not sure. Oh, he's climbing stairs now. He's coming upstairs. Get out of the house. Are you going to buy this thing? Would you buy? They don't say what the price is. They say it will be affordable. Spot Mini. New from Boston Dynamics. If who knows? In a year, I'll probably be doing an ad for it. Do you miss your dog? Would you like a dog that doesn't eat, doesn't poop, and can climb stairs? Sure, it could be bearing weapons of mass destruction, but don't think about that. It's the quietest robot you've ever heard. What a world we live in, huh? We're already starting to see this kind of shift, and I think it's happening. I really do think it's happening with artificial intelligence. I've said, as I said last hour, that it's a marketing term. It's often misused. But at the same time, there's genuine progress being made. Tom in Hawaii's next. Hi, Tom. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. I'm having a Linux problem.
All Ubuntu. Right, Ubuntu. Yes, sir.
I've been using Ubuntu for years, since level 10, and you know, there's hiccups along the way. I'm always able to deal with it. I've been on the internet yesterday for about 4 hours going through forums. I've got an HP 15 computer that has 1604 on it, and the other day I tried to download a 1604 onto a flash drive so that I could install it on one of my older computers. So after I did that, I left the computer on for 3 days. I just put it, you know, in sleep. And then yesterday I had to do something, and I shut down the computer. And when I shut down the computer and then turn it back on, I can't get past minimal bash-like editing is supported. GNU Grub. Yeah. And I can't get past it.
Yeah,
and I've researched for 3 or 4 hours yesterday on what to do. So, I'm hoping you or someone in the chat room could guide me, but I've followed everything that it says to do on all the forums. So what's your take on this?
So first let me translate into English for people listening going, Ubuntu, what, Linux? So,
okay.
So by the way, congratulations. I think you're in the forefront. Linux is a free operating system. You know, Windows is an operating system. Macintosh OS is an operating system. Linux is, of the three, the least used, but it is completely free. It was developed in the early 90s by a Finnish graduate student named Linus Torvalds. And that's where the name comes from. He kind of named it after himself.
Oh,
Linux.
Okay.
Yeah. And he based it on an operating system that was widely used in universities for teaching called Minix. So really, Linux is Linus's Minix, but it has always been kind of an attempt to replace the functionality of Unix. You may have heard of Unix. It's kind of the university operating system that kind of goes back to the prehistoric days of computers. And in fact, runs many of the big machines, the big iron. It's very powerful. And so Linux is very popular among hobbyists, enthusiasts, but that's kind of one of the things to keep in mind when you use Linux. I like Linux a lot. I use it. I install it on a lot of PCs. Most PCs can handle it, but they're not designed for Linux, and Linux only supports the hardware that other Linux enthusiasts write drivers for, because most companies do not provide drivers. HP doesn't provide Linux drivers. A few companies do. Dell does, but most companies don't. And so when you install Linux on an HP, as in your case, you're kind of hoping that somebody has written all the necessary support utilities to make it work. There's two possibilities here. Ubuntu, which is the flavor of Linux you're using, is free, really good, from ubuntu.com. I like it a lot. And it does work with most PCs out of the box. Two possibilities. One, it's incompatible with your video card, because that's what's happening. It's stopping at the boot. It's breaking at grub, which is the bootloader, which means it's having trouble either reading the disk or launching the drivers so that it can get a screen up. But that's my long-distance diagnosis. The way to fix this, A, is to try again. It's a hobbyist operating system still. It's not supported by any one company. Ubuntu is supported by a company called Canonical, but, you know, give it away. So, you know, first thing I would do is try installing it again. It's happened to me many times. The install didn't quite take. Maybe that's all it is. If it isn't working, it's probably because there is something in that hardware that is incompatible with Ubuntu. So what you need to do is research on the version of Ubuntu you're using, 16.04, and that exact HP computer. And there are lots of sites that will give you some more information about that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We're going to take a break. Come back with more of your calls. Our show today brought to you by Simply Safe. Love these guys. I really want to give them a big plug. You know, in the last 2 weeks, I probably don't have to give them a big plug. Simply Safe won Editor's Choice Awards from CNET Magazine. In the last 2 weeks, PC Magazine. And really, my go-to source, The Wire Cutter. Three very highly respected product testers, really the big three. They put SimpliSafe through a battery of tests. They compared it to other home security products, and SimpliSafe won every time. SimpliSafe is the home security leader. I've been telling you about it for a while now. It is the easiest to install. You do it yourself. The sensors are small. They're attractive. They don't get in the way, and they really work. Glass break, motion, doors opening. They've got water sensors for burst pipes and water heaters that fail. They've got all the sensors you need. They've got cameras. And best of all, it's really affordable, and they give you full 24-hour a day, 365-day-a-year monitoring for less than anybody else, $15 a month with no contracts. You go month to month. No one else is doing it like this. If you want home security, you got to learn more about SimpliSafe. It can help protect your home. All you have to do is go to SimpliSafeLeo.com. I've installed it for several of my family members. It's really good stuff. SimpliSafeLeo.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More of your calls. 8888 Ask Leo coming up. Also, Dick DiBartolo, our gadget guru, the Gizwiz, about half an hour from now. Stay right here. So the trick on installing Linux, are you still there? Did I lose you? No. Yes. I ran out of time, Tom, so I just had to give you the basic. The trick on this, and maybe you already did this, Ubuntu, like most Linuxes, has a live install. So you can boot to that key, and if it all works right, then you know your hardware is compatible. Have you done that?
Yes, I tried to do that. What happened, and when I put on a USB drive, it changed the USB drive to recognize it now as a CD-ROM. And when you look inside, it says firmware. I've installed it three different ways, and then it tells me after I've done it that the kernel's missing.
So what I'm saying is if you have set up I think your problem actually is that your USB drive is not set up properly. There are issues that come up with modern hardware with in terms of Secure Boot, the Safe Boot, and UEFI. There's two separate issues that Linux can struggle with. So the first thing to do is make sure that you've got a USB key that you can boot up and run Linux from the USB key. Do you know what I'm saying? As a live USB key. I don't think you've even got that at this point, right?
Okay, well, I've downloaded 1604.
So follow the instructions on making the USB key. You've got to get the right image, one for a USB key, not one for a CD-ROM, and you've got to follow the instructions and make it exactly as they tell you, because it's easy to make it wrong, and you'll know if you made it right, because you'll be able to boot to that USB key, and Linux will run, because it's not running off your HP, it's running off the USB key.
Right.
If that works, that means its drivers are compatible, and you always want to do that first. It also means you've got a good installer. And then run the install from the live install. There'll be an icon that says install Ubuntu.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
All right. I'm getting hung up in the section where I can use the startup menu, go to...
No. Yeah, don't do any of that. You don't have a good you don't have a good USB drive yet. You got to make one you can boot up fully.
Okay.
Until you have that, there's no point in going any farther.
Okay, so I have to use another computer that has an older Ubuntu on it, which is 15.
No, you could do it from Windows, Mac, or Ubuntu. Doesn't matter. But follow their instructions on how to make the USB key. Otherwise, it won't be compatible. It won't be bootable, and you won't be able to install. And then once you do that, you should be able to boot to the USB key and have the HP screen show fully running Ubuntu. If it does, you've got the drivers. You're ready. If it doesn't, then you have an incompatible computer. It's kind of complicated, but there are a couple of places people fall pitfalls. One is making that USB drive. You have to make it properly, and it's not just, you know, it's not obvious. You can use UNet boot in if you're using Windows. You can use DD to make it, but you have to, you know, use the DD command properly if you're making it on Linux or a Macintosh. But you have to make a bootable USB drive. If that USB drive doesn't boot and run Linux, you're not ready to install it. Then there's the whole issue of whether you turn off Safe Boot. You probably do have to turn off Secure Boot. You almost always can use UEFI, but you have to make a UEFI boot drive. The USB key has to be UEFI compatible. They'll have instructions on the Ubuntu site for that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Everything from robots to net neutrality to installing Linux to microphones. We've covered it all, haven't we? 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Linux is great, but Linux is not friendly in the sense that, you know, Windows or Mac is. In fact, truthfully, most people, when they buy a computer, buy it with an operating system already installed and never mess with it again, right? If you want to start using Linux, there are a few companies, System 76, Dell even, that will sell you a computer with Linux pre-installed. Then it's kind of as easy as using Windows or Macintosh for the most part. But if you're installing Linux on an existing Windows machine or Macintosh, you know, there's some hurdles. But that's the fun of it. Right? Right? That's fun, right? Line two, Matt Spokane, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Matt.
Hi, how you doing, Leo?
I'm well. How are you?
Oh, I'm not too bad. I'm surprised I got through to you, man. I've been trying, and I always get busy signals, but thank you for taking my call.
Well, I don't understand why the phone's always busy. It just seems to me you should be able to get right through.
Yeah. Okay, my question is, I got an Apple 4K TV, and when I turn it on, it goes for about an hour and then just shuts itself off.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these devices like the Apple TV, the Roku, they're computers, but they're computers in a pretty challenging environment. It's a small case. There's a processor, memory, storage, everything that a computer would have in that little black plastic box. But notice there's no fans because they don't want you don't want fan noise in your, you know, while you're watching the TV. So it gets pretty hot. If it's shutting down after an hour, it's almost certainly shutting down because it overheated.
Right.
So what you might want to do, I mean, and the other problem, of course, is you know, the cabinet under your TV where all that other stuff is getting pretty hot too. I have to continually open the door on my cabinet because it gets so hot. When we were on vacation, we had a house sitter, and he actually brought a big house fan in. He said, it was so hot in there, I took the fan and I blew air in there. And I said, thank you, because it's not supposed to get too hot. And so it may be that it's even worse for that Apple TV. You know, Apple TVs, in my experience, don't overheat very often. But if they do, it's probably because it's in a hot situation. So get it somewhere where it's a little bit cooler.
This thing is right out in the open, man. I have it sitting right on top of the Blu-ray player I have.
Maybe take it off the – because the Blu-ray player might be kind of hot. Feel the top of that. It might be hot.
It's warm.
Yeah. I mean, that generally, if hardware fails after a period of time like that, that's heat. It's almost always heat. Because after you let it sit for a while, it works fine.
Yeah, I can immediately turn it back on after almost instantly.
Well,
then it goes another 30 minutes and then boom.
Yeah, it's almost certainly heat. But standard troubleshooting tips on an Apple TV or any device like this is to reset it. There is, if you dig down in the commands, there is a command in the settings to, you know, start over, erase everything and start over. And maybe, bad chunk of software that's giving you what we call a memory leak. That's the other reason computers can fail after a period of time, is that there's software that's got a bug in it that causes it to crash after a period of time. It may have a memory leak. So redoing it could fix that.
Okay. So when I pick it up, I notice that the new 4K models have the vents in the bottom.
Yeah, because they get hot.
And there's a little bit of dirt around there. Could it be dirt inside of it?
Sure, it could. Yeah, you can't really open that yourself. I wouldn't recommend it.
And don't blow it out or nothing?
Well, yeah, blow it out judiciously. If you use canned air, pump it, because if you keep pressing, after a while it gets cold and you'll get condensation and moisture in there. That's even worse than the dust. So you got to be careful with that. But yeah, you might try cleaning it out. It's probably overheating. And truthfully, if you brought it to Apple, it's new, right? It's still under warranty.
Yeah, it's like 6 months old.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, they warranty it for a year. Apple would probably just swap that out.
Oh, awesome! Well,
yeah.
Thank you for your time.
My pleasure. Yeah, it could be something. It's just bad. You know, there's all sorts of things. For instance, and I doubt Apple has this problem. Apple's usually pretty good designing hardware that handles heat. But I've noticed my Apple TV fritzes out, and I'm pretty sure after a while, and I'm pretty sure that's heat. But it could all, you know, there's all sorts of little things that can go wrong over a period of time with the hardware. And if it's somewhat faulty hardware, replacing that might help too. But the Apple's very good about replacing those kinds of things. Usually no questions asked. If you're nice, bring a box of candy to the genius. Alan Santa Clarita, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Mr. Laporte, how are you, sir?
I'm well, Mr. Al. How are you?
Excellent. Real fast, I met you years ago at the Consumer Electronics Show.
Oh, yeah. Those were the days.
I think it was the last one you went to.
Yeah.
And I was with a friend of mine, Bill, and he dared me to ask you. And I said, this is my friend Bill. He has a computer, but no internet.
Oh, no.
I don't know if you remember that. And you gave him a look saying, basically, so you have a big, expensive typewriter.
It's a fancy calculator, yeah.
Oh, that was too funny. So. That was a scare. We still laugh about it.
Oh, well, did he get internet eventually?
Of course not.
No.
No. He just basically types and writes. And,
yeah, that's fine. Hey, if he's happy.
The
doesn't have to worry about security with no internet.
That's true.
No bad guys getting into her system. What can I do for you?
Possible answer for the guy running Ubuntu. I call myself the 12-year Linux novice. And I have
we all are, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I have a Dell and a horrible time. I had to go to Linux users group to give me a hand to install. I originally had Mint on it, and eventually I changed to Ubuntu Mate.
Yep.
And I have to run the installer twice off the USB drive. It has to repair the bootloader. And maybe that guy needs to try.
That sounds like what's wrong is because he's failing at Grub, which is the bootloader. So
right.
Maybe right. That's it. Maybe so he had to install, yeah, just run the install twice, huh?
Right, because let it go, do its thing. It wants to restart, pull the drive out. You'll get the error message. boot off the drive a second time. And it's so advanced now.
I didn't think it was possible, but this is actually making Windows sound good.
Yeah.
Hey, I got to run. Hey, thank you for the call. 10-year Linux novice Al. Nice to talk to you again. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Somebody called in and said, you have to have 2 gigabytes of RAM to run Ubuntu. Noted. Thank you. Let's see. Oh, Al, I think I was talking to Al, and we ran out of time. And Al, you had a question.
Yes, sir. Thank you for your patience.
My pleasure.
I run a VPN on all my systems, all my Linux systems, and they allow me up to 5 devices. What I want to do eventually is get it's called a Tomato or open source router.
Yep.
So I could VPN up the router, and then all the devices automatically be protected. Problem is that the latest, greatest routers, like your mesh routers you recommend, are not open source. So I was thinking maybe getting a cheap Tomato-type router and then route the newer, like a mesh router, into it. Do you think that would work?
I think you're better off not buying anything sold as a router, but instead buying an inexpensive computer and running open source router software on top of it. Because really, a router is just a computer, right? I think you're getting focused on this notion of I need to use a router to be a router. I know a lot of people, for instance, use pfSense, which is a very powerful firewall router software that you can run on hardware. You obviously have to have one Wi-Fi radio and one Ethernet connection, because you're going to get internet from the cable modem or DSL modem. That's going to come in through the Ethernet port, and then it has to be a Wi-Fi router. But you're going to have much more powerful hardware. It's not going to be more expensive. I mean, it will be more expensive than a $40 router, but it's not going to. But you could actually use a Raspberry Pi, so maybe it isn't.
Which I have also, by the way.
Yeah, so run something like pfSense on there. It'll give you a better open VPN. It actually give you choices of VPN software. Be more controllable.
Would I have to keep the device on all the time then?
You do.
Okay. That's why I was just thinking a router, because the power consumption is way less.
Yeah, okay. That's reasonable. There are a lot of – if you go to Tomato's website – or the DDWRT website. Those are both open source router software. I want to say companies, but I think really Tomato is a community project. You can go to their site and they'll tell you which hardware is compatible. And then you can just buy. That's the best way to go. Start with a router they say works. It's not that the router software is open source or not, by the way. It's merely that Tomato is written to work on it. You're going to replace the firmware on the router completely with Tomato.
Correct. You do a firmware upgrade.
Yeah. So you don't care what software.
You flash the BIOS on the firmware, right?
Yeah, it's very analogous to what we were talking about earlier, putting Linux on a PC. It's a PC that came with Windows. You don't care if Windows is open source. You're just going to put Linux right on top of it. So same thing with your router. You're just going to put Tomato right on top of whatever the heck software there is.
Thank you so much
for
your time, Lou. I know you got other calls. You are the best, by the way.
My pleasure. Thanks for hanging on and being so kind and nice. Yeah, Tomato's great. I'm a big fan of the Tomato software. And so if you go to their website, they'll tell you. And it's really a matter of them having written it to work with those particular pieces of hardware. Usually they're inexpensive router. It's Polar Cloud, I guess. Polar Cloud, is that right? PolarCloud.com/Tomato. And, yeah, see, they've written it for the Linksys and Buffalo routers because they're cheap. It does require a Broadcom chipset. May work with some routers with a Broadcom chipset. Probably, almost certainly, would not be a good idea on a mesh router. There's no point in spending the extra money for a mesh router like the Eero or the Plume or the Velop. You're buying a lot of extra capability you're not going to use. Although that does raise an interesting question. I wonder if there is, if you could make your own mesh router. No, now we're just talking crazy. Line 2, Debbie Milpitas, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey there.
Hey there.
So I've been listening to you since the late 80s when you were on KNBR after Garden Talk.
Wow.
Fred and Garden Talk?
Yeah. Nice to see you. The old days. We were, yeah, late 80s. We were talking about DOS, Windows 3.
And now I'm calling you about Windows 10.
Nice.
So I have two old laptops that are running Windows 10 really slowly. Actually, not one's not old. It's a GPD Pocket. Just love that little
machine. Oh, you have a Pocket. Aren't they cute?
I love it. It's so cute. It rides around in my purse.
It's about the... It's tiny.
Slow.
Yeah. It's slow because...
And I also have an Acer netbook that is also really slow running Windows 10.
You know why those are slow? Because they're slow. They're very slow.
Yeah, so what can I do to make Windows 10 giddy up?
Not much. Yeah, the netbooks especially. How old is that Asus? Is it Asus or Acer?
It's Acer. Acer, it's about... I got it in 2012.
Oh, I didn't even know they were still making netbooks. Netbooks, the whole idea of a netbook was really cheap.
It was a Sandy Bridge processor, so it wasn't an Atom, but it was still pretty slow.
Really cheap, and then a lot of the very earliest netbooks had XP, Windows XP on them, of all things.
Yeah, it makes me want to run WordStar again.
Yeah. So I have a GPD Pocket. I think it's great, but it is really slow. I mean, they don't have a lot of memory in it for the I mean, it wasn't cheap, but you're paying for the size.
Yeah, I wanted something really small. I got tired of hauling a heavy laptop around.
How do you feel about the keyboard? Can you use the keyboard?
Well, I just have a bunch of cheap USB keyboards.
Ah.
Weird stuff. So I just kind of have cheap keyboards everywhere.
You are such a geek, Debbie.
I am.
Weird stuff's gone.
I know.
Isn't that sad?
I was there the last day, and I bought out a pile of dollar USB keyboards.
So Weird Stuff was a just giant warehouse store in Silicon Valley where they just sold weird stuff, but it was all technology. I think it was all technology stuff, right? It was all parts and weird things.
Yeah, and it was all in bins, not in shrink wraps. You could, like, paw through it.
I guess, in a way, the passing of Weird Stuff is, I don't know, somehow a sign of the times.
Yeah.
They were purchased by some equipment company. I don't know what they're going to do with they're probably just going to sell it all off. Apparently, the Weird Stuff domain and trademark are available for sale. So if you want to buy weirdstuff.com, Debbie, and rent a warehouse, start selling all the stuff you bought.
Linux on the GPD Pocket.
It's hard to do, though, because the Pocket is such weird hardware. If you want to run Linux on it, and it will be better because you can use XFCE and some lightweight stuff, you've got to go and read up on it. There's a pretty good subreddit on Reddit for GPD, and there's a guy who has made images for the GPD Pocket that make it a little easier to install Linux on it. You can't just use a regular install. You have to have a special installer. It's worth it.
Yeah, well,
it would
run TV, and I'm already sick of recompiling video drivers.
I don't think you'll have to do much. It used to be very challenging. You really did have to, get in under the hood to make it work. But I think he's made working images for all the GPD models. So if you have a Pocket, I will find this guy's. I bookmarked it because I've been meaning to do this. It is not a super fast computer running Windows 10. I agree.
No,
with that.
It is not. But it is so small.
It's cool though. You got a whole PC in your pocket.
Windows 10 out of your purse. Let me tell you.
Seems like there'd be better ways to do that. Hey, it's nice to talk to you, Debbie. After all these years, please call again.
I will.
I love talking to geeks.
Thanks.
Take care. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Speaking of geeks, the GizWiz is up next. Yeah, I bought the Pocket. I thought, oh, this will be really cool. But it's basically unusable, my opinion. It's too small. I can't type on the keyboard. I never thought of using external keyboard. But if you're bringing a keyboard along with you, what's the point? Right? It's not here. I'd show you. It's just little, tiny little thing. I have it in my desk. I've never used it. It probably isn't even charged anymore. I watch people like John Travolta and Saturday Night Fever, and really the dancing seems more about look at me then I'm dancing with somebody.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Just checking. Dick DiBartolo is Mad's maddest writer. He has been for years. He's also a gadget hound, a gizmo wizard, if you will. That's what we call him, the Gizwiz. He's also a disco freak, and that's why our wonderful musical director, Michael Cozio, plays disco for him every time.
Yes. Here. Gets me in the mood, wakes me up.
Dick, I brought back from Japan a gizmo.
You did?
Yeah, then you can do your gizmo.
Oh, okay.
I was at the Tokyo Edo Museum, which is actually a great museum in Tokyo. The history of Japan. The left half is old Japan. The right half is new Japan. And they had a display on Japan through the decades, 60s, 70s, 80s. And I think this was from the 80s. It is the, 1981. It's the Sharp EL-428 Solo Cal. I don't think it was sold outside of Japan. This is not a joke. It is a regular push-button calculator with a real abacus on the side.
So the abacus could check if the electronic side was correct.
It's some sort of odd transitional device.
Is that
wild? That has got to get a place in your gadget warehouse, I think.
Oh, I love it.
See if you can find one.
Yeah, look on eBay.
Is the calculator the backup for the abacus or the abacus a backup for the calculator? But it probably was the case that at that time, people were very, very fast with the abacus.
Yes.
Right?
And then someone say, I don't think that's right. And they go, all right, well, I'll do it electronically.
It's not like they ever released a slide rule with a calculator on it, or did they?
I think I have that.
What did you bring for show and tell today, Mr. D?
This is probably the least expensive thing I've ever talked about, and something I already are using in four different places, okay? It's called Button Lamp. Now, Button Lamp is a tiny adhesive-backed single LED, okay?
Okay.
Now, I have one stuck under my desk. So when you drop something and it rolls under the desk, you don't bother getting a flashlight. I just have this little LED pasted to the bottom of my desk. I flip it on. Then I find what I need. I have one above my door jamb because late at night, the hallway's not that well lit. I click that on and I can see the two keyholes very clearly. One on the top of my toolbox. The top of the lid inside. So when you open the toolbox, it shines down. And what's neat, Leo, they're six for $10.
You finally found a way to put LEDs on every surface of your home.
Every single surface of my... Exactly.
Well, they come in packs of six, so why not?
Exactly. Yeah, on Amazon, don't buy the three-pack. The three-pack is $7.99.
Oh, my God. How dare they?
Yeah, and the six-pack is $9.99, so you certainly want the six-pack.
So it's little. It's like the size of it, literally, of like a coat button. It's not very big.
No, exactly. It is the batteries are not replaceable. They're two CR2032s, but by the time you buy two CR2032s, they're 75 cents each, so it's the same price as almost the same price. Yeah. The button lamp.
Oh, I should have known better. This is from your favorite company in the world, Panther Vision.
Panther Vision, the people who make the flat flashlight, and this is one of their newest products.
The problem is, every time you do these, I think this is like a Mad Magazine gag.
No, it's
not. The flat flashlight and the button lamp.
No, yeah. I think it's a very clever idea. When you need just a bit of light for a short amount of time. And they also have one in a closet that has a little shelf on top. And I can never see up on that shelf. So then I have one of those at the side of that shelf.
That's a good idea. Putting it in the lid of your toolbox.
That's neat.
That's a good use because often you'd be like under the house or something.
Yes, and they're waterproof. Also an ice cooler. You're looking for something in the ice chest at night?
I just put it right in the beer bottle. Then I don't have to worry.
You know what? They're submergible. I think that's the perfect idea.
Okay. Button lamp. Seeing is believing.
Yeah,
that's their slogan.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. They must have put a lot of energy into thinking about that one. If you want to know more about the button lamp and all the great gadgets Dick brings, not just us, but to all the shows he's on, including ABC's World News Now, you can go to his website, gizwiz.biz, gizwiz.biz. You can also, if you're there, you might as well play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance for you to win a autographed copy of Mad Magazine. All you have to do is identify a close-up picture of a gizmo or a gadget. Did we? Are we on a new one for May?
Yes, we are for May and June.
Okay. What was last month's? So I didn't.
That thing was the.
It looked like a peel, like maybe a Smurf fingernail peeling.
No, it was a very bizarre gadget called Slice Your Wiener, and it was to it was to run down a frankfurter.
It's a portable bris device. It's for the Moyle and all of us. Okay. Yeah, I would have never guessed that, to be honest.
Make curly friends. Oh, you know, by the way, Leo, your chat room just said, put one of those lights on the toilet seat lid.
Oh, good idea.
Another great reason.
Too bad they aren't motion sensitive. That would be useful.
They're not.
Slice your wiener. All right. Only two people got it right.
Only two people.
I'm not surprised. Okay. It's a spiral hot dog slicer.
Correct.
Well, here's the new one. If you take a look at that picture, I don't know what it is. Maybe you do, but it doesn't matter if you know, because there's autographed Mad Magazine, six of them for the right answer, but there's 12 for the best cute, silly answers. So make up an answer. It's all at gizwiz.biz. Don't forget Dick's podcast at gizwiz.tv. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. Take care and welcome back.
I'm glad to be back.
Okay.
All right. I got a minute left. Let's see if we can get one more in here. On line three, Alan in the Redlands. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Leo.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Hey, I recently wanted to consolidate all my contacts, and I transferred them from Outlook to Google and tried to put everything into my Google account. Now my contacts disappeared from Outlook. I'm trying to figure out a way to get them into some kind of program where I can do what I need with them and then move them back in, cleaned up, you know, all organized. And I wanted to know if there's something you can suggest.
Yeah, this is a perennial challenge, mostly because synchronization is fraught with peril, right? When you synchronize, it depends, you know, the wrong thing could synchronize, including an empty phone book, which sounds like what happened to you. Yeah. Or you get lots of duplicates. There's all sorts of stuff. So you're exactly right. The thing to do is to somehow make the perfect address book. You know, your computer geeks would call it your canonical address book with no duplicates, and then back it up. And if ever disaster happens again, you restore from that. Of course, it won't keep up with the times when you add new stuff. I actually use Google for that. I'm sorry that you had a problem with Google. On iOS, I use a wonderful app called Full Contact. I'm not sure what Windows folks use. Are you on iOS by any stretch of the...
No, I'm not.
No. We're going to have to find it. But my suggestion is you just do it manually in Google and then back it up. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.